Indeed. Well, let's get into this budget situation. Lena, and again, State Representative Lena Gordon, which basically represents, well, my old legislative district from many years ago. Well, I look back, you know, since I've been gone, Vince Cook,
Tom Bradley,
Lynn Jenkins,
right,
and then you. You're the fourth representative since I left.
Mm-hmm.
That means I'm getting old. But at any rate, your legislative district, Southwest Topeka, and Lena Gordon is known as an individual that certainly has a great track record on tax and spend issues. And again, my compliments.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a look at the headlines, grim revenue estimate expected. It looks like now we've got another $250 million shortfall. You're coming back to town in a couple of weeks for a wrap-up. Before you leave town, this budget has to be balanced according to state law. Lena, based on where we're at as of this moment in time, the budget that's already passed, did we actually see spending decreases, or is this just more government-ease talk that we reduced the spending increases, therefore we're calling it a spending decrease?
Well, we did.
Are we spending more tax money?
Well, I think we had some decreases, but especially with the anticipated, now I'm losing track of the federal stimulus money, we will probably see some increases.
So we really didn't reduce spending again.
No.
You know, it's just legalese when we're talking about balancing the budget. Mm-hmm. Accounting changes are going to balance the budget. That means we're still taking it in the year as far as not really reducing the size of government.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek Sontag was on the show yesterday talking about over the past 4 years, spending has gone up by 48%. That means we have had double-digit spending increases every year for the past 4 years. And, Lenny, it comes back to my big complaint, and I've been talking about this for years. I'm going to bag once again on the Republican Party in the state. We've seen it on the federal level, but we're seeing it here as well in Kansas. And I'm always asked, why are you always bagging on the Republicans, never the Democrats? For a simple reason. Because the Democrats, with all due respect, I don't agree to their solutions to problems. They're going to spend money. They're going to attempt to establish yet another government program to work our way out of whatever problem it is. I don't believe in that. But I'll give the Democrats credit, they're honest. When you vote for a Democrat, you know you're voting for bigger government. They make no bones about that. You know, that basically is their mantra. I don't agree with it, but I respect their opinions. I don't respect the Republicans, by and large, you being one of the few exceptions to the rule.
Well, thank you.
Because Republicans, we run on the platform that if you elect me, I'm going to fight for reduced government spending. I'm going to fight for you and reduce taxes. I don't give a damn whether somebody fights or not. I just want to see them follow through with the campaign promise of attempting to hold the line on spending. Our state Senate has been disgraceful. It's a disgraceful group of individuals serving in that state Senate that call themselves Republicans, and we see these double-digit spending increases.
Mm-hmm.
And, Lena, we're not seeing much of an improvement this year as
yeah.
far as truly coming in when we've got an economic crisis on our hands. 1,500 to 2,000 people showed up this week at a protest rally because we're smart enough sitting out on the outside looking in to know that we have got to start controlling the size of government. Or this problem's going to get worse.
Absolutely.
How do we turn this around?
Well, we have to make some cuts. And, you know, we have made some cuts. I have to say some progress has been made, but it's difficult because of some of the individuals that always want to protect, you know, a lot of the programs that perhaps need some trimming. In the last several years, one of the things that I think the Americans for Prosperity made a huge impact in the last several years, because at least the spending was not increasing last year at the same rate that it had been increasing the previous years. Now, would I like to see further cuts? Yes, because I think we have to. We have to look for as many cost savings as we can. And you cannot hold harmless any budget. And the House was able to cut the education budget slightly, but less than 1%. And that's 51% of our budget. And I don't know, having another a shortfall in what it's projected here is very, very scary. And I know, I've been very impressed with our leadership this year in the House and with our appropriations chairman, who has tried to do his very best to make sure that we are preserving the services that protect the safety of our citizens and those most vulnerable citizens, you know, and also make those cuts, some of those cuts that need to be made in order to do that. I mean, we're talking about making choices, even cutting education.
What's going to get cut 1%? When you come back? Because, again, now we've got $250 million. And Tim Carpenter, Carp, pointed out this morning that if we're going to balance the budget based on this latest round of $250 million shortfall, it would take an across-the-board 4% spending decrease for every department, every agency.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we actually come in and start cutting spending? And again, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I'm talking through you.
I'm for that.
Legislators, hopefully, that are listening.
You know, I'm for that, and I feel that we need to have zero-based budgeting. There's a lot of things that we need to put into place in a, you know, in our system. We've worked for the last several years to create better transparency in government by requiring departments to report more accurately and so forth. I've continued to introduce, you know, bills having to do with school finance, and unfortunately I couldn't get it out of a committee that would require that school districts all budget and report in the same manner so that we can more clearly see where they have the money and what it's going to. And, you know, it's simple accounting to me, and yet it is met with so much opposition that it's difficult.
And, Linda, that really amazes me, and my hat's off to you for continuing the attempt, mm-hmm. you know, to come up with uniform reporting
mm-hmm.
for school districts.
Mm-hmm.
This problem, of course, surfaced several years ago. An individual, John Edsel, has passed away.
And Bill Button pushed
Button
for some of it. And, you know, I've introduced a bill every year for the last 3 or 4 years, and we got it out of committee a couple years ago. This year I couldn't even get it out of committee. It's still sitting there, and I haven't forgotten the issue, but, you know, with our difficult budget situation, it's hard. But we need these measures in place so we can really see where we're going.
Yeah, I know John Edsel and Bill Button, this was before Bill was
mm-hmm.
in the state Senate, was an individual that really was a hard charger as far as attempting to understand the USD 501
mm-hmm.
budget.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Bill discovered, USD 501 was no different than the other 299 school districts. Everybody was doing it a little bit different. There was no uniformity whatsoever, and it was impossible to pick up a major school district school budget and understand what was there.
Mm-hmm.
Just virtually impossible. So, again, it gets back to what you say is transparency in government.
Mm-hmm.
If we had all 299 school districts using the same forms,
the
same methodology for figuring their budget, then we could figure out, you know, we have to be able to identify the problem
mm-hmm.
before we come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're coming up with a solution, not knowing what the problem is.
Exactly.
We've got it just backwards.
Yeah, because sometimes we don't even know how much is being spent on a particular weighted factor. And I will say the one thing that when Bill Button started talking about this, it did bring about some change in the way some of the individual school districts have addressed the situation, but it still is not really required on the state level for them to all do it in the exact same way.
Yeah.
And until they're all reporting the same things in the same categories, it's difficult to compare and find out where the money's going.
Lana, we have now talked for 25 minutes without a break.
You may take a break.
Can we take a break?
You may.
Thank you, Trish. We do appreciate that. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Hey, before we do, I do want to mention the Golden Corral. Folks, what a great place to eat, especially if you're looking for food, lots of it, at just a great price. For less than $10, you can go to the Golden Corral tonight, and you can have all the sirloin steak you can eat, plus everything else. They've got a salad bar that, my gosh, it's just huge. They've got everything there.
You're making me hungry.
Well, For less than $10, have Arnold take you to dinner tonight at the Golden Corral. 16th and Wanamaker. Okay, State Representative Lana Gordon is my guest. She represents Southwest Topeka. And I'm district number 52. So if you have a question or a comment, you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. We're broadcasting once again from the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Uri. Stay tuned. More to come.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Placing 18th in the last Summer Olympics didn't earn many headlines for the Netherlands, and we rarely talk about who is 18th in line to succeed the president. When it comes to the health and well-being of Kansas children, 18th place isn't worth writing home about. The 2008 Kids Count Report, a nationwide study of the well-being of children, ranks Kansas at 18th. Though we continue to take steps that will improve the lives of Kansas children, we can do more. Find out what it takes to become the best state in the nation to raise a child. Visit Kansas Action for Children, KAC.org.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're apt to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today. 785-272-6100 or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Christmas lights and headlights, too late to know the difference. Train
Unlike six of my high school friends who died in a truck train crash, you have your whole life in front of you. So don't waste it by walking on or near railroad tracks. This is singer Gina Taylor for Operation Lifesaver, reminding you to stay off the tracks and stay alive. For more information, log on to OLI.org.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with State Representative Lana Gordon at the Roundabout Cafe. So, folks, again, if you're here, if you have a question for Lana, don't hesitate to step up. We'll be delighted to talk to you at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Yours, coming in at 9 o'clock. I know we've got Kevin Dole representing TK Magazine and John Arnold representing the Metro News. And we're going to spend some time, I know, on the flip side of the 9 o'clock news talking about our public library. Yes, we are the little rascals. Hey, coming up next Tuesday, April the 28th at 2 p.m., this is going to be an event at the Kansas State Historical Museum, and it's going to be the Holocaust Commemoration Service, and topic is going to be Never Again, What You Do Matters. Never Again. what you do matters. And the main speaker is going to be Keith Pickus. He is a PhD, the Associate Provost, and Associate Professor of Modern German and Jewish History at Wichita State University. So, folks, again, this is free. It's open to the public. And, again, if you have an interest in the Holocaust, the topic sounds interesting, you can just simply show up at the Kansas State Historical Museum. And of course, the address is 6425 Southwest 6th, just right west of WIBW TV 13's studios, if you know where that is, just right north of I-70. And again, this event's going to be at 2 p.m. on the 28th of April, and it is free, open to the public. I got an email from Patrick Wilbur, and I just want to let you know there's going to be a free film. This is going to be at the Kansas Union Woodworth Auditorium, 6:30 Sunday evening, and the film is going to be America, Freedom to Fascism. And Patrick Wilbur, by the way, is the treasurer of the Libertarian Party for the state of Kansas. So, again, this movie is free and open to the public. Something else that's free and open to the public, Coralie Evans and Lisa Cusick, the owners of Brick House Antiques, they have got an estate sale today. And what have they got? They've got everything, modern furniture. They've got accessories, jewelry, vintage kitchen. They've got a lot of, pop machine in the rec room, quilts, just everything. Everything is going to be at this estate sale. And the address for this is 4501 Southeast Oak Bend. 4501 Southeast Oak Bend, and it's right off of 45th Street. So, folks, again, this is an estate sale. It's going to be today and tomorrow. And Lisa Cusick, Coralie Evans, of course, they own Brick House Antiques. They're going to be on the show sometime next week, and we're going to be talking about what's hot and what's not in the wild, wacky, wonderful world of antiques. But if you have some interest in this estate sale, write the address down, going on today and tomorrow. Are you a garage sailor, an estate sale?
Oh, a little bit, not much. I sometimes will drive down the street, and if there's something that catches my eye, I might stop.
Yeah.
I like to have them.
You're a garage sailor? Huh? All right. Well, if you are, this is going to be a big one. 4501 Southeast Oak Bend, off of 45th and, what is that, California, out of that neighborhood. Oak Park neighborhood, I think it's called.
I think it's right off of 45th. Right off of 45th Street.
Yeah, I know the neighborhood. I just can't think of it.
Not very far from the lake, from Lake Shawnee.
Very close. Mm-hmm. Very close. So, folks, check that one out. Okay, Representative Lana Gordon's my guest. Lana, again, $250 million shortfall. Now, when you come back to town on April the 29th, your best guess, how do we balance it? Are we looking? I know there's rumors. And again, we're talking about our state senate, which is certainly not a group of conservatives over there, are talking about the possibility of a tax increase. I would imagine if a tax increase issue raises its ugly head, it's going to be raised in the Senate. I can't imagine the House.
No, I've heard or seen what you saw in the paper about Roger Wright. You know, he was in favor of a tax increase. I'm not in favor of a tax increase. I think this is the worst time with what's happening in the economy, what's happening in people's personal lives. You know, we've seen a lot of escalating prices as it is, and we've seen a lot of people losing jobs.
Yeah.
This is not the time to take any more out of people's pockets. And so I think that we have to look at cuts.
Now, Roger Wright is a state senator from Raleigh County, the Manhattan Junction City area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Senator Wright. I've never met the individual.
He was a former House member.
Yes.
Well, mm-hmm.
And I know he was talking about his right-of-center, fiscally conservative approach to everything, but he said, well, I've just got to get away from this conservatism, and I think I'm going to have to support a tax increase. I might point out, and again, I'm talking about an individual that I've never met before, don't know Senator Roger Wright, but when he says he was a fiscal conservative, I wonder in what lifetime was he a conservative, because it certainly wasn't in the lifetime of him serving in the state Senate. His lifetime voting record, folks, on tax and spend issues, a miserable, embarrassing 21%, which puts him ahead, by the way, of our Senate leadership. But, again, he's voted wrong 80% of the time on tax and spend issues, and he's apologizing for a tax increase. Well, again, with all due respect to the individual, he's part of the problem. If he would have voted right 80% of the time rather than wrong 80% of the time, we wouldn't have this mess we've got today, which is true of so many elected officials. So, again, Roger Wrights is the one that apparently has been put on point to run this tax increase out of the state Senate.
Well, we've heard rumblings that there may be a push for income tax increase as well, and that does not seem like the right thing to do either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I just want to compare Senator Wright's voting record to yours. He's been wrong 80% of the time on tax and spend issues. You've been right 75% of the time. So, again, 75% of the time on tax and spend issues puts you in a select group. In our legislative body. Unfortunately, there's not many that can say that. Joe Patton might be coming in. I'm not sure whether he's coming in this morning or not. Mm-hmm. State Representative from South Central Topeka. Then we've got Peggy Mast coming on next Wednesday, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Peggy's got a very, very, very good voting record as well on tax and spend issues. State Senator Chris Steiniger, I might point out, Democrat from Wyandotte County, will be back on the show in 2 weeks, and again, a Democrat that's got a very, very good voting record on tax and spend issues. So there are some good legislators, folks. When we start bagging on our elected officials, they're not all bad. In fact, the people that are voting as tax and spend liberals, they're not bad people. We just disagree on spending. So want to make sure we've made that distinction. Lena, if you were in charge, it ultimately is your bill to write. You're guaranteed you've got enough votes. You've got enough votes out there to override the governor. What would you do to balance the budget? This is going to be the Lana Gordon solution. And you're going to have little, if any, opposition. What would you do?
Well, I think that one thing we don't do enough of is evaluate more closely with the agencies where there can be some cuts made. And so I think that it would be best to look and see where some of those cuts could be made. And to me, the priorities in state government, you know, we've got to protect, you know, we've got to protect the people from a safety standpoint, make it safe. That's an important. It's important to help those who are most vulnerable and have no other way. But there are, you know, things that have come into government, some of the entitlements that have come in, that probably should be reevaluated, you know, who can, you know, go for that. But I would certainly look for some, you know, to make some cuts in some major budgets.
Yeah, you know, if we're going to have a 4%, and this is Tim Carpenter, article in the paper today, his column, that says, you know, to balance this puppy, it's going to take an across-the-board 4% cut everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That would mean public education as well.
Mm-hmm.
That means you're going to have a lot of company at your doorstep if you attempt to cut public education by 4%. Because
how many
education lobbyists do we have now?
A lot. A lot. And there, it seems like there's a lot of duplication. I served on the education committee this year, and I found it interesting, you know, how many, you know, it's been a number of years since I served on it previously, my first 2 years in the legislature, but I noticed that there's a number of school districts that are represented by their own personal lobbyists, and then there's a lobbyist that maybe represents a group that they belong to, you know, like the School for Fair Funding, and, you know, that brought the lawsuit. And so it's really difficult. That's probably one of the reasons why it's been so hard to cut that budget at all. The House was able to make less than a 1% cut of their, you know, of the education budget, but it's difficult to hold harmless 51% of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the school districts have some contingency funds, and contingency funds are kind of like rainy day funds. Now, one of the things we found out with some of those contingency funds that was really interesting during this legislative session is that some of those contingency funds have been put elsewhere, taken out of the contingency and just kind of put into their regular budget so that those districts may not have any anymore, but they did. they can do whatever they want with some of those contingency funds. It's some money. They have a certain percentage of their budget they can put into that fund and use it for whatever they want, basically.
On that note, let's take a break.
Okay.
We need to work at a break. Okay, State Representative Lana Gordon is my guest. And again, folks, this estate sale, I want to plug it again, 4501 Southeast Oak Bend, right off of 45th Street, around Lake Shawnee. Big estate sale. This is a really, 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 really big estate sale. Check it out today, and we'll be back with State Representative Lana Gordon. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done and cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
I'm the one that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
Thinking about dinner and a movie tonight? Before you go out, make sure to visit food.cjonline.com. You'll find a searchable website featuring listings for all movies and restaurants in the Topeka area. It's your one source for movie times reviews, as well as restaurant styles, menu prices, and other helpful information. There's never been anything like it in Topeka. It can even suggest just the right dining establishment based on your personal preferences. That's food.cjonline.com, the source for dining and movies in Topeka.
Topeka businesses with common interests are joining together through the Topeka Independent Business Association. TIBA members are locally owned. You live here and have a significant investment in the local economy. We want Topeka to grow and prosper, and we want our voice heard on taxes, affordable health insurance, and local issues. If you're a small to medium-sized business that shares similar interests, join us. Learn more at topekaiba.org. Together, we can make a difference.
This radio ad was produced by Cumulus Topeka. This copy and the contents recorded hereon are the exclusive property of Cumulus Media, Inc. and may not be used, broadcasted, or reproduced in any way without the express permission of Cumulus Media, Inc.
An ordinary day. An ordinary family's living room filled with an ordinary bunch of kids. And they were doing nothing. When suddenly...
That's a personal foul. Inactive activity on a sunny day.
Coming to the rescue was NFL running back Reggie Bush.
Let's play.
Yeah! And play they did. There was running and jumping and laziness was crushed.
Hey, kids, don't get a lazy penalty.
Go online to smallstep.gov for fun playtime ideas.
So you can be a player, too.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Be a player.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with State Representative Lana Gordon, representing Southwest Topeka. We spent a half hour talking about the budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a tough one.
It is going to be tough, and I don't think we have the answers yet, but we'll have to come up with something before we leave.
Again, I think the rally that we had on the 15th of April,
mm-hmm.
it was indicative of the fact that there are a lot of people throughout the state, all over the country, that are saying, we've just got to start controlling government.
Mm-hmm.
What a crowd.
It was an amazing crowd the other night. I could not believe how many people were there, and it was a wide variety of people, all kinds of philosophies, and it was great to have that many people there and to see people getting involved in what's really important.
Yeah, and you know, Lana, something that Jim Dinas was in, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the sales tax increase, and of course, Jim was very heavily involved
mm-hmm.
on the other side of the issue. If I would have mm-hmm. lived in Topeka, I would have been kind of a soft no vote. I think
mm-hmm.
no was the way to vote. I don't know. I didn't have any strong feelings because I could see both sides of the issue. But bottom line, in the primary election we had in Topeka,
mm-hmm.
we had 70% of the voters that showed up, a 13% voter turnout in our primary election, and Jim pointed out that out of the 13% that showed up, 70% of the people that voted in the primary were over 50 years of age. Now, the encouraging thing about the rally that you spoke, you were one of the
mm-hmm.
speakers on April the 15th, last Tuesday. Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
The rally Wednesday. There, it was a very eclectic group. All ages were represented.
Yeah.
In fact, I would venture to say maybe 70% of those that showed up, whether the crowd was 1,500 or 2,000, whatever it was an amazing turnout, A. And probably 70% of those turning out were under 50 years of age.
I would say so.
A young group.
Some of them had their children, and some of the most, those people that were the most excited about it. There was a young woman that I had encouraged to come, and she was so excited about it that she came, and I think she'd come to future ones. But there were a lot of younger people, and they had their children with them, and you know, it was an unbelievable crowd.
Yeah, yeah, I was just encouraged with the average age of those that showed.
And
it was encouraging just to see a lot of families out there, 25-year-old, 30-year-olds. This was not a group of retirees.
No, and they're saying...
I mean, there were several people my age that are aging baby boomers.
And I believe they're saying...
We didn't make up the majority.
I believe they're saying we want a better future for our children than what
Bingo.
We're seeing now. And I encourage, you know, people to continue to be involved in these grassroots efforts. It's extremely important. It helps us as legislators know, you know, what people truly think and, you know, what direction they want us to go. But it's important to send that message to the government that we've had enough.
Yeah.
And make your voice count.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly, I think, what was done. And again, I was just amazed at 10,000 people.
I am too.
In Johnson County.
And I've run into people since the event who are just so excited about it. They hope there's going to be future events. They want to continue to stay involved. And I think that's what's going to make the difference.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it because you're here. We've got a lot of good legislators. Unfortunately, you all are still in the minority. But, folks, there's people like Lana Gordon that are very responsible fiscal conservatives out there. And if we're going to turn this government around, we have got to get energized and activated. And people like you that are running for public office and running for re-election, we have to show our active support, or it's never going to change. This is a good example this year, the Kansas legislature. We're basically balancing the budget on accounting changes. We've had some spending reductions or a slowdown in the growth of government, but we're not anywhere close to where we should be as responsible elected officials, you know, turning this around. We got in trouble because of excessive spending, and we haven't turned that corner yet. And the only way to turn that corner is to elect the Lana Gordons, the Joe Pattons, these Democrat Chris Steinigers of the world, the Peggy Mast of the world. These are the type of people we have to have in elective office, or nothing is going to change.
Well, and I commend, and we need groups like the one that organized the Tea Party to get behind us and encourage us, because that to me is empowering, and that helps me do my job better.
Yeah, and Lenny, you know, I've talked about on the air how tough it is to be a legislator. To be a true fiscal conservative, because I saw so many legislators, I've seen so many come and go, that when they were first elected, you know, they were going to be, their intent was to be a responsible, fiscally responsible individual. Well, what happens as a legislator, as you're well aware, you sit there from 8 to 5, you've got a stream of lobbyists coming in and out of your office. They're all good people. Most of them are representing fairly good causes, and they all want more money. So, a responsible fiscal conservative, you're going to have a succession of people in and out of your office all day long that are asking for more money. And if you're a responsible conservative, you're saying no to everybody that comes through your doors. At the end of the day, for a fiscal conservative, it's a very lonely feeling. And that's the reason groups like Americans for Prosperity are so important, to prop people up like you. That, you know, are there attempting to hold the line on government spending.
Well, they make our job easier, because
Absolutely.
I think we're hearing from, you know, a larger group that's saying, you know, we've had enough.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's an old saying, and I've used it so many times on the air, that if you rob from Peter to pay Paul, you're always going to have the support of Paul. And, frankly, this is what the Democrats have been very good at for years. They'll create a new entitlement program, which means now we've got a new group of people that are somewhat dependent upon government. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats are the ones that are introducing and passing these programs. So this gives the Democrats yet another block of voters that are now dependent upon government. So it's tough,
it
you know,
tough.
Being a responsible mm-hmm. fiscal conservative. Mm-hmm. Tough as can be.
Yeah, it is. And you've got all those pressures around you and colleagues who won't budge, too. So
yeah.
It's tough, but it was energizing to be at the Tea Party.
Yeah, just to have people that are there in support of you and
mm-hmm.
giving you a pat on the back for mm-hmm. doing what you promised to do mm-hmm. when you ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
And if we would do more of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, then we might have a more responsible group of elected officials when it comes
mm-hmm.
to spending our tax money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It would certainly be worth a try.
Like I say, it was great seeing a crowd like that. You mentioned before the low turnout, you know, for the elections, both in the primary and also this spring. There was not that many, just, what, last week or whatever. And we certainly saw what difference one vote can make.
Oh, boy.
In an election.
Amazing.
And I wouldn't want to be in that kind of election, one vote, you know, here or there. That's a tough situation to be in. But people didn't get out to vote. And
yeah, out of 4,000 votes cast. You know, District 7, our city council seat,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
turned on one
vote.
One vote. One vote.
That is just living proof of how important it is to get out and vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know there's people on both sides. Some are absolutely,
absolutely.
Dancing in the streets because Mr. Urchin won. But I'm sure there's others that are saying, gee, if I just would have gone out and voted, the other candidate would have won as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just... It,
and as a candidate, you think, if I hit one more door, if I hit, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Difficult.
And Ms. Stubbs and I have had our challenges. But I still felt bad. I didn't feel bad for Ms. Stubbs because Bob Archer was on the show, and I think he's going to be... I've been disappointed
mm-hmm.
before, but I think he's going to be a responsible, mm-hmm. reasonable watchdog
mm-hmm.
in District mm-hmm. 7.
Mm-hmm.
But Ms. Stubbs, to give her credit, I think, A, she's intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
B, I think she's hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
C, I think when she was on the city council, she came prepared.
Mm-hmm.
She did her homework. She wasn't a slackard by any stretch
mm-hmm.
of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to give her credit for her three strong points.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to her work ethic, she had it.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, it would have to be so difficult because I know
mm-hmm.
Ms. Stubbs worked hard.
Worked hard on her campaign. They both did. You know,
but Barb Archer worked equally
yeah.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough, you know, because, again, you lose by one vote. And if you really have that work ethic, because something I tried to instill in my kids, you know,
mm-hmm.
the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Right.
And they both worked hard. So as hard as Ms. Stubbs worked, you know, to lose by one vote, that would have to be tough.
That would be tough. I would hate to be
respect,
in her shoes, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you lose by 500 votes,
Then
you know,
clear. It's a clear decision. Yeah, much clearer decision. Anyway.
Yeah. I better take a look at doing something else because obviously this isn't where the good Lord intended me to go.
Yeah.
But a one vote loss,
that would be tough.
Yeah, because you're constantly going to be second guessing yourself.
But I think it will give a good message, hopefully, to the public of how important it is to get out and vote.
You bet. I don't think. Hopefully, we won't see another 23% voter turnout.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see a bigger turnout.
Yeah. How do we turn that around? You know,
I don't know.
Because this time, you know, not only were we reelecting a mayor, which was a citywide
mm-hmm.
election, we had more than half, 5 of our 9 city council
mm-hmm.
members up for reelection, or we were going to elect a new
And we had school board members, too.
School board members
mm-hmm.
as well, and a tax issue on the ballot.
And I'm surprised there weren't more people out voting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think that people, you know, get to the point where they feel like it doesn't matter what they do. And I think that may be a more major reason why people don't get out and vote, and they don't understand that it is important. And I think we can keep up the illustration, hey, look what one vote
did. And, you know, if Archer, because Bob Archer, when he was on the show, and I didn't know Bob Archer
mm-hmm.
before he announced. I never met the man. In fact, I'd never heard his name, frankly. I was very impressed when he was on this show.
I know some of his family better than him. His daughter was in dancing class with mine.
Oh, okay.
And so I know the family pretty well. I know his wife better than I do him, but I have met him as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Blackburn didn't say anything very intelligent. It's just with his exiting remarks Tuesday night at the City Council meeting. But he did say, Mr. Archer, you now have the target on your back. Now, he was right in the respect I think a lot of people are going to be watching Bob Archer, because Bob Archer, again, ran as a fiscal conservative. And I'm going to be a responsible watchdog. I hope he is. Because, again, I don't want to create any more cynicism out there than there is already. Gee, I vote for these people, and I hear it all the time. I vote for these people, and we still see government out of control when it comes to spending. And I just hope that I think people are going to be watching Mr. Archer, you know, in terms of the type of representation we get. And I think if Bob Archer proves to be what he sounded like he could be when he was running for office, that might energize a few more people, A, to vote.
To vote.
And maybe a few more people like Bob Archer to run for office. So.
But I also do think that some of these grassroots, going back to the grassroots groups, we have grassroots groups that kind of, you know, come together and help people get more feeling like they have more power to make a difference. I think it will get them involved, too.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, again, it's difficult to comprehend. You know, with the serious problems we have in this community, this state, and this nation today, that 77% of our voters would choose to
not vote.
Not vote.
It is concerning. It really is.
Yeah.
And so I have to hold out the hope that people who get involved in things are going to start helping each other see the importance of being involved and what an impact it can make.
Lana, what else? We've got about 2 minutes to go. What else is coming up when you return to Topeka the 29th? That is a real major concern to you, that it's still an issue that's out there, it's unresolved, something that we've just got to take care of business before you go home, in your opinion.
I don't know. The budget has really been kind of the overpowering part of this legislative session. We've had less bills than we have in the past. Because of it, because we know the seriousness of it, and people are not creating quite as many bills, which would also cost us money, not only from the standpoint of printing, but also from the standpoint of, you know, this is not the time to be creating a lot of new programs.
Yeah.
And so I don't really know, you know, we still, the governor vetoed the coal bill. I don't know that that's going, you know, what, whether we're going to be able to override that in the House or not. I mean, it's looking highly unlikely.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what happens then on that.
No indication from Parkinson. It might be too early for Parkinson to strike out on his own. What's your thoughts?
I would think he's probably going to support what the governor's been doing on that.
Through the veto session.
Yeah, and I don't know if she, you know, if she gets confirmed, I don't know how soon she'll be going to Washington either.
Yeah.
So she may be here for the duration of the legislative session.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so,
you've got an interesting
four days, a week. There's not really much else that can be on the agenda at this point. Most of the bills are either said and done or have to wait until next year. So.
Yeah. And I haven't had the chance to visit with Mike O'Neill. Mike's been around forever. Lord, I served with him.
I've been very pleased with our new speaker. I think he's done a great job. He's got a lot of challenges with this budget, but he's been right there with the, you know, right there in the process and helping give a lot of guidance, showing great leadership. I've been, as a committee chairman, I feel like I've had backing for the issues that our committee's had and good guidance from Mike and not micromanaging by any means, but good guidance and good leadership. And so I look forward to him being there.
Yeah, I always thought Mike, when I was in the legislature, certainly to the left of me somewhat, but who isn't? But I thought he was intelligent, hardworking, pretty responsible, again, a responsible fiscal conservative. So,
yeah, and, you know, and being that his background, and being his background as a lawyer, he knows the laws, and he tries to make sure that we are following the law as it is, as it's written.
Yeah. Lana, good to see you.
Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
State Representative Lana Gordon. Okay, coming up, we've got our media roundtable. We have John Arnold representing the Metro News. Kevin Dole just walked in representing TK Magazine. Steve Foreman's here, so we're going to have, we'll have three on today. One of the topics is going to be our library. Yes, indeedy. That's coming up, and I don't know what else, but folks, if you have a question or a comment, as always, you can visit with us at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish. Or you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Trish Johnson of the news straight ahead. We've got a Dow report, Dow Jones report coming up. And then to our three media roundtable guests. Stay tuned. More to come.
Good morning. Here's just some of the news you can read more about in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. Frito-Lay is moving towards packaging its SunChip brand that will decompose to compost, part of its ongoing effort to minimize the company's impact on the environment. SunChips are made by Frito-Lay in the Topeka plant and six other locations. The plan is to have the snap bags 100% compostable by Earth Day 2010. The bags made from plant-based materials will disintegrate in about 14 weeks in a properly managed compost pile. The local library board of trustees decided against turning the page Thursday evening, opting instead to keep four sex-related books available to minors. The board of the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library voted 6-3 in favor of adopting a staff recommendation to keep the books where they were currently located, on the shelves in the library's health information neighborhood section. With half of Topeka's governing body on hand, Shawnee County Commissioners took a step Thursday towards merging city and county parks and recreation departments. Commissioners Vic Miller, Shelley Bueller, and Ted Inslee voted 3-0 to approve an amended version of the proposed joint resolution expressing the intent of the city and county to consolidate parks and recreation departments into a single county agency effective January 1st. Mostly cloudy today, a high of 68. Thunderstorms overnight, a low of 51. Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will return.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection. Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Excuse me, why are you saving those old eyeglasses? You know the ones, stuck away in the desk drawer, haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back at the Roundabout Cafe. Hey, don't forget, today is Barbecue Friday at the Roundabout Cafe, and one of the cooks, well, not one of the cooks, the only cook the Roundabout has here today, is also one of our 9 o'clock guests, former radio personality, maybe future radio personality at some point in time. Good morning, Steve Foreman.
Good morning. How's this work again, Jim? You know all the technical stuff. You know me. I just sat there and answered phones for you all those years.
Yes, indeed. Well, I can certainly answer the technical questions, as you're well aware. I've got the technology of this radio and internet business down pat.
And you got to give Carrie, my wife, at least partial credit for what we're going to eat here today. So.
We'll give Carrie partial credit. This is going to be Cow and Sow and Wow Barbecue. And again, Steve, you've been barbecuing part-time. You've got a catering business now, I believe.
Yeah, folks can get a hold of me at steveforman1960@gmail.com and be happy to visit with you.
But folks, come out.
It's a hobby.
Barbecue today. And barbecue is out here each and every Friday at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish. Kevin Dole, are you a barbecue aficionado?
I came in last week for the burn-ins, and they were awesome. Thank you very much, Steve.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the endorsement.
Well, a ringing one indeed.
John Arnold, are you a vegetarian? Are you a meat eater?
I am certainly not a vegetarian. I love barbecue. And Steve's out here smells pretty good, usually. I don't smell it today. Is it early?
It's early.
Okay.
It's just starting to.
All right, okay.
John, let's talk about the Metro for a minute. We had Denise Hull.
Yes.
On last week. And I haven't had the opportunity or question I should have asked Denise. It should have been question number one. Now that the Metro has gone subscription only, and that started last Friday.
Correct.
This could be permanent, temporary. We're not sure whether, in fact, this is going to be permanent or not. But for the time being, the Metro, two issues a week, and it is subscription only. And I think the Metro is number 232-8600?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you have an interest in subscribing to the Metro, and folks, I hope you do, because I want to see this paper succeed. I want to see you make it. I love Kevin McGinnis. I call him Room 235. I think your column is one of the best in the business. You write a great column.
Thank you very much.
I enjoy Farrah Harp. You know, she's left of center, but I really, there's times I find myself in complete agreement with what she's written, which scares me. And, of course, Pat Buchanan, you know, the person that I've got up here on the pedestal.
Sometimes I agree with him, which scares me.
But, again, does the Metro News, do you have a website? Can we pick up John Arnold's column on a Metro News website? I have never asked the question.
No, I think only the legal documents can be picked up. The legal printing are online. But I think Denise Hull is taking a look at whether she can put it, make a website and make it work.
I know Kevin has a blog where he posts his column, Kevin McGinney, and I believe it's room235.blogspot.com. So.
Sure, oh, Kevin's listening today. He's somewhere in western Nebraska.
Driving a truck.
We speak. And on his way to South Dakota next weekend. John, do you have a website where your columns are posted?
I have a website, but my columns are not all there. And that website is the johnnyarnold.com or fallback position book, because that's where I'm .com, where my book is being touted.
Have you thought about posting your columns?
Yes, I have.
Because you were starting to pick up a pretty good following. I know for those that...
Well, I sometimes get some really good comments, quite a number of them. Past couple of weeks, particularly, because I hit on the KU fee structure for football and basketball tickets.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are not happy with that, the way they require contribution.
Well, and I know some people weren't happy with some of the columns you've written about our local political scene, but that means, hey,
oh,
people are reading your columns.
Yeah, those people are just wrong.
But when you've got people saying, I disagreed with what John Arnold wrote today, that's a good sign.
Oh, it is.
Because that means they're reading.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, again, if you're writing a column where everybody's in agreement, that means it's going to be pretty vanilla, pretty deadly dull, which means in a few months nobody's going to read it.
That's probably
not
right.
The case with you.
Probably
you're doing
right.
A good job.
Thank
hey,
you.
Let's talk about the headlines, top of the fold, front page news. Again, one of my favorite people. In fact, she used to work with Steve Foreman on 1440 for about a year. She was with you for a year, I believe.
About that, yeah.
Yep. And somebody that I met several years ago has become a very close friend. And she was a young lady that went to our library board and said, hey, when a kid walks in this library, I want to make sure that kids in the Topeka community are protected where they're not going to pick up porno, they're not going to pick up fleas and filth off of the bookshelves. I personally 100% agreement with Kim Borchers on this issue to set the stage. But the library board last month, by a vote of 5-3, said, yep, we're pretty much in agreement with Kim Borchers, too. We're not going to attempt to restrict adult reading material. There was no attempt made by anybody to restrict what an adult can come into the library, check out, and read. But yes, we're in agreement, we think, that we should have certain books restricted out of the hands of children. For children walking into a library, there are certain reading materials they're just not going to have access to. Well, at any rate, then our library staff got involved. Of course, then we had the threat of a lawsuit coming from the left-of-center crowd. All kinds of things started happening. And to make a long story short, which is difficult for me to do, last night by a vote of 6-3, basically we have reversed our decision now on what can and can't be restricted at a public library. Several statements in the paper, Ann Bush, I thought did a great job of covering this, and I want to give a pat on the back to Terry Kimes, Suzanne Robb, and Karen Nicolay for sticking to their guns on this issue. Jim Rankin, Dan Gunther originally were yes votes on this, but I believe because of the threat of a lawsuit, I think possibly they reversed their position. And again, I guess I can somewhat understand that. Several things in this article trouble me. I'm sure all three of you, Kevin Dole, John Arnold, Steve Foreman, have read this. But one of the things that really troubled me that I don't understand, a lot of things I don't understand, this being one of them. Let me read it. At Thursday's meeting, Gina Millsap said she originally offered a third option that the attorney for the library, Mr. Engel, informed her it likely would trigger legal action. That option was to label each book with a sticker stating the material was harmful to minors. How in God's name could this trigger legal action? Don't we do this on R-rated movies? A is one example. This one just absolutely completely mystifies me. The whole thing.
Well, the whole thing mystifies me. I don't understand why putting books of, you know, that depict sexual graphic positions and everything should be in an open, you know, area anyway. I mean, it's, we do restrict access. I mean, that kind of imagery is not appropriate for children under the age of 13. That's why they are not allowed to go watch rated R movies. Hollywood realizes that, for crying out loud. Why here in the middle of America our library does not, or the patrons who oppose that. I don't understand the argument. I was amazed that they even came back with option A as an option. Because it was a change.
And Kevin Dole, I might point out, and John Arnold, Steve Foreman, Kevin Dole, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but R-rated movies, I believe this is something the library strictly enforces. If it's an R-rated movie, a 12-year-old isn't going to check that movie out of Topeka Public Library. Because
well, why not?
It has that R sticker on it. Now, again, getting back to putting a sticker on a book, what's the difference? Steve Foreman, John Arnold, who wants to go next?
Could be that the word harmful may be a problem. Legally, because that's a judgment call that people can't make. But I wouldn't understand why it couldn't say adults only or something like that. You don't have to make a judgment about it. Just,
yeah,
you know, appropriate for adults only, to me, would avoid a lawsuit. I mean, if it's okay for your local Quickie Mart to restrict certain magazines and say, unless you're 18, you can't buy this top row of magazines, then why would it be any other problem? I don't understand that either.
John,
yeah, and movies, you know, an R-rated movie has been rated by some independent agency. And I can't tell you who that agency is nowadays. But there is a law that governs what is PG-13.
It's a group called the MPAA, the Motion Picture Something Association.
Something,
yeah.
Okay. And they put that tag on there and don't allow under 13-year-olds to attend.
Actually, 17. 17,
17,
17, yeah, 17? Yeah, that's then PG-13.
PG-13.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's right.
Yeah.
There you go. But putting a sticker that says harmful, maybe harmful to minors, I think she's right. Harmful is a judgment that's much more difficult to identify. You can say, look, okay, if you put a sticker that said under 13 can't check this out, or under 17 or something like that. But, you know, I just really think that it's a losing battle if you want to try to eliminate everything that's in print from young people being able to see it, because they can find it on the internet, or they can find far worse very, very quickly on the Internet, and they're a lot faster at it than I am or you are.
So we filtered our libraries at the public library. They've been filtered, and again, that was as a result, in part, of Kemp Borchers getting involved in this issue. But, John, these kids, of course, have access to a lot of porno, a lot of fleas out there.
You bet.
But since this is a tax-supported institution, don't we have the responsibility of at least making the attempt to restrict porno reading material, to make the attempt, to protect our children? Don't we have that responsibility?
Or at least establish community standards. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, but if I want my 16-year-old to read for some, you know, ungodly reason, The Joy of Gay Sex or whatever, I can check out and I can hand it to her. So it's not like we're really doing that much restriction. It's just a matter of allowing parents to make these final choices, allowing an adult role model to say, yes, okay, even though this is, you know, the standards, local standards say this isn't for you, I think it's for you, so it's okay. And we're not giving parents that right to veto one way or the other by not restricting.
Yeah, and again, I think we need to point out that this group that Kemp Borchers has formed is making no attempt whatsoever to restrict adult reading material. This has to do with kids.
Sure.
You know, it's a lot like saying, well, we don't allow kids 11 years old to drive a car because they don't have the maturity to handle it. It's like saying we don't allow 13-year-olds to go into a quick shop and buy a beer because they don't have the maturity to handle it. And I think the same, possibly the same line of reasoning could be applied to this library issue. Anybody?
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
This doesn't happen often, folks. John, sure I haven't spoken up. I don't think we're going to have what?
I'm not sure I agree. The difficulty I have, Jim and Kevin and Steve, is that a library is supposed to be able to provide information to people so that they can check things out. And without trying to sell a particularly liberal point of view, which I'm not on this issue, I still think the open information is probably the chief role of the library, to provide information.
But they choose every day what books to buy and provide and which books not to.
True.
They choose to provide these books, but they choose not to provide other books. So
true.
They are themselves filtering which information is provided to us.
And there's a practical aspect of that, though, Kevin, in that there are 200,000 books published every year, and you can't buy them all.
Absolutely.
No public library does, and they try to figure out which are the best, most, I suppose, interesting to people. Now, why they particularly bought those particular four books, I have no idea. But somebody in the Library Association undoubtedly said that these books have some redeeming quality for a particular audience. And I guess they've been checked out and there's a waiting list, so I, you know.
Must be a demand. And unfortunately, not among 13-year-olds. But unfortunately, and this is the other side of the coin and where I don't always agree with these efforts to limit and ban, some of that demand may be because of the publicity that these books have gotten.
That's correct.
And so whenever we choose to fight these battles, and I admire Kim for the battles, but we have to watch them and be careful what we choose, because we sometimes can give legitimacy to something that we don't want to give legitimacy to.
The law of unintended consequences is always out there. And that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of this library issue, there are several people in this community now talking about the possibility of forming a group to force the election of library board members. Now, folks, our library board members, it currently is comprised, there's 10 people that serve on our library board, 3 of which are appointed by our county commissioners, 7 of which are appointed by our mayor. And we're talking about pretty good expense as far as the bill levy that we're all paying to support our Topeka/Shawnee County Public Library. This is not a freebie by any stretch of the imagination, folks. It's no free lunch, and certainly when it comes to the library, because the library expenditures are roughly a third of the total city of Topeka expenditures. We're spending a lot of money on this public library, which brings us to the question, should we take a look at electing library board members as opposed to the current system of allowing the mayor of her city appointing 7 people to the library board and her county commissioners appointing the other 3? Good, bad, or indifferent, pros and cons of the election of a library board.
I don't see a whole lot of, I agree, it's a huge amount of money that we spend on the library, so having some community representation and selecting the leadership of it makes some sense, but it seems like the library board really electing it.
Yeah, you mentioned community standards, and would, if we elected our library board members, would this truly be reflective of our standards in the community?
You never know. I mean, then you. I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, this same board just voted to reverse what it just said a few weeks ago under the threat of lawsuit. I mean, that's, to me, that's what always happens when a traditional position is taken by a group, like a city on a nativity scene or a school and a prayer before graduation or whatever, then under a threat of lawsuit, which they know that they have a likelihood of winning because the courts are controlled by liberals for the most part, they cave because they don't want to endure the expense of legal action. So, I mean, it wouldn't matter if it was under the control of, you know, elected officials or not. I think that they're going to reverse their position because they don't want to endure the expense of lawsuits.
John Arnold, Steve Arnold, Steve Foreman.
Courts are controlled by liberals for the most part, Kevin.
Yep.
I don't buy that.
I think they are. What do you think, Jim? Am I wrong?
Kevin, you're very seldom wrong.
Thank you.
Jim,
I would tend to agree. Thanks, Steve.
Anyway, I guess that's probably
Kevin,
a subject.
Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman, Jim Cates, and then we also have John Arnold.
Let me say this, if I may, about electing. I think Kevin's right. I don't think you're going to have much of a quantitative change in what policy would be based on that. And what was the turnout of the municipal election?
23%.
Which is good. Which was good. It's not going to be reflective of the whole community. It's going to be reflective of the 1/5 to 1/4 of Deacons that bother.
So you would say no to
electing
library board members?
I don't think it would really change that much.
Steve Foreman, on a scale of 1 to 10?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I wouldn't mind seeing it happen, but on as far as the level of importance, maybe a 3.
I mean, would they seriously campaign for that?
Yeah, what would the debates be like?
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
First like
you
host that kind of debate.
First of all, they don't whisper.
John Arnold.
We just went through a municipal election, and I don't recall any candidate being asked a question about the clerks. A candidate for mayor or any of the council members. I don't remember anybody being asked. You? Did you see anybody?
Good point.
So it's not obviously a huge issue, even though it is both polled in the newspaper today and has been for some time. But I do have a friend who went to the mayor and to one of the council members and said she'd like to be appointed to the library board. And they each asked her if she was for censorship or not. She said, no, it's the First Amendment. They said, well, we want somebody who's for censorship. Okay, well, there you go. That's an electoral kind of an issue if the appointing authority says that they want somebody for censorship. But, you know, again, I think we don't need to have an elected, particularly if your general purpose people, mayor, city council, are not involved in that issue, as they were not in this most recent election.
Well, this issue wasn't about censorship, though. I mean, it's just controlling appropriate information for minors. That's not censorship. That's just, if that's censorship, then rating systems on movies. And,
well, there's no question. Rating system on movies is censorship. But it's done by compliance with some law. And I don't know. Federal law must be.
I think it's voluntary. I think there was the threat of a law if they didn't do it. But
yeah,
I think
right.
The MPAA is voluntary.
I know in Kansas we have what we call the affirmative defense law that's on the books. Basically, it gives the libraries a pass if they're sued as a result of being sued because of having offensive material on the shelves. And again, this gets into a traditional conservative versus liberal split on whether we should have an affirmative defense law on the books or not. My concern, you know, with electing library board members, I suppose on a scale of 1 to 10, I would be maybe a 3 on this issue as well, coming from a little different perspective, that going back to our elections that we just went through in Topeka, 77% of Topekans chose not to vote, which meant we had a lot of special interest groups out voting, number one. I think if you take a look at our school board elections, I live in USD 437. Kevin Dole, I know you're in 437. John, you may be as well,
I think.
I went in to vote. I had no idea we had a three-way general race on our school board election in a district I live in, and I'm a member of the media. So, again, just who these people are that are running for school board positions, in so many cases, we don't know much about them. And I think if you get down to the library board level, we're going to know even less, which would give a special interest group, whether they be right of center or whether they be left of center KNEAers, I think by and large would control the elections on a library board issue, which the general public wouldn't have that much interest in or knowledge of. So, anybody?
And it was that argument, Jim, that caused the people in the early part of the 20th century to go with what they called the short ballot, to get rid of the long ballot, which meant that you elected everybody in all the different positions, because you ended up with that very thing happening. Too many people being elected that nobody'd ever heard of. And they could be by a special interest. You could have that kind of thing happen. And so the short ballot is to try to take general purpose people like the mayor and city council and have them in charge of parks and rec, water and sewer, library and airport, things like that, so that you know who they are, but you don't have to elect all the individuals that are running those entities.
Yeah. Well, we're all pretty much in agreement. Trish, I hope you noted at the time that John Arnold publicly said, Jim, I agree with you.
I got it down.
9:29. Okay.
Did I actually say that? I didn't hear those exact words.
Well.
With all this election of the library board, we've had several guests on the show over the past couple of weeks. We've mentioned it, and it certainly is going to have some legs with some of my conservative friends, and it's going to have some legs, I think, with the left of centerites as well. So I don't know where this issue is headed, because, again, I think both sides, liberal and conservative, are saying, well, if we elect these people, it could reflect community standards. But the four of us are generally in agreement. Good idea in theory, but practicality, maybe it just would be, again, unintended consequences. So, on that note, let's take a break. John Arnold, representing the Metro News, is my guest in the Metro. Now it's a subscription only, and the paper's out today. And Kevin Dole, TK Magazine, the next issue of TK Magazine's coming out.
And about a maybe a month. Yeah. Maybe.
A month. And Steve Foreman. Steve, former radio personality, we worked together for 6 years?
About 5 years, I think, yeah.
5 years.
It only seems like so. Hmm? No.
And Steve today, by the way, he's a real barbecue aficionado, and he's been doing this for quite some time, part-time. And he's been out to the Roundabout Cafe. I think this is your third Friday out here, I believe.
I think you're right.
And this is Barbecue Friday. So, folks, if you want some great barbecue, come out to the Roundabout Cafe today, 21st and Urish.
And by the way, many people don't know this, but this whole thing is your fault. Me cooking barbecue. Because if you hadn't introduced me to Ken Johnson, who decided to have a class and get me hooked on it, I wouldn't be doing this.
Well.
A class is
something else
barbecue?
What's that?
A class on barbecue?
Yeah. It was an all-day, you know, how-to, basically.
Ken Johnson's one of Topeka's finest police officer in this great community. Hey, we might talk about that as well. When we come back, I want to talk about yet another library issue. Then we're going to turn it over to John Arnold, Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman for what you consider to be the top stories of the week. We're going to get into it all. Don't forget, 10 o'clock this morning, Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. He's going to be in for an hour. We're going to be talking about gardening issues, so it's all coming up on CJ Online. Stay tuned.
Did you know volunteering can be fun? Community service is for everyone. Young people, families, men, women. As a volunteer, you'll help your community and gain valuable skills. Network with others. Energize your life. Make an impact and have fun.
Get in step with your community. Volunteer. Visit www.lionsclub.org.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
In November 2004, Jose was sentenced to 8 years for committing a gun crime. His wife and two sons were left alone.
Today I want to talk to you about being arrested.
My family has suffered immensely. They're the ones that really suffer the most for my decisions that I've made in my life.
What would you tell young kids?
Just think about your family first. Your family always comes first and your family is always going to be there for you.
When you commit a gun crime, your family serves the sentence with you. Gun crimes hit home. Brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Hey, the Dow is down 7 points today, and that announcement was courtesy of Roger and Ryan Schumacher, Retirement Tax Solutions, 228-0222. 5909 West 28th, and Roger and Ryan, of course, they're going to be back with us next Wednesday at 10 o'clock with an hour of good, sound financial advice. And again, you can pick that up each and every Wednesday, 10 to 11. Roger and Ryan Schumacher with Retirement Tax Solutions. And as always, with all of our guest folks, all you have to do is just come out to the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish, and it gives you the opportunity to meet our guests either on or off the air. Your choice. That's why we're here, and that's one of the advantages of being out of the Capitol Journal building out here at the Roundabout Cafe, because it gives you the opportunity to interact with our guest. And our guest this hour, Steve Foreman, former radio personality and also is the cook today, Barbecue Friday at the Roundabout Cafe. And it's going to be Steve's Barbecue. Kevin Dole representing TK Magazine and John Arnold with the Metro News. Again, staying with this library issue for just a few more minutes if we could. And then we're going to move on to other topics. This is a story that appeared on page 3A of today's Capital Journal. And it said the library privileges of two teenagers have been suspended for engaging in a sexual act April the 3rd in one of the study rooms at the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library. The security staff was notified, but the two teens had already left, apparently, the building. And Gina Millsap said security tapes did not reveal anything. And to continue, the Topeka Capital Journal received a tip about this incident April the 9th. Now, again, today is April the 17th. Camp Journal knew about this incident April the 9th. When the newspaper contacted the library staff later that day, staff members said they were not aware of it. They only became aware of it when one of the board members of the library board mentioned this in a public meeting and asked Ms. Millsap, the library chairperson, or the executive director of the Topeka Shawnee County Library, and then Ms. Millsap said, well, yes, indeed, this incident did happen. Again, it gets back to protecting kids. You know, if we're not going to do anything about protecting the reading material for kids, the security, you know, as far as having sex in the public library, somewhat concerning.
Is it in a reading room?
In a reading room, yeah. And security
they didn't have a book
didn't reveal anything.
They didn't have one of the books open, did they? Well, and I was just thinking, it is a shame that they weren't able to get anything on video, because under the current standards of the library, they'd have to let teens rent that out. That's right.
Good point. But it concerns me, you know, when the Topeka Capital Journal approached the library staff on April the 9th, and they said, no, nothing happened. And then a week later, they said, well, yeah, it kind of did. You know, two kids having sex in one of these study rooms, so to speak. I guess I'm somewhat concerned because, again, our kids, we encourage our children to go to a public library. We've heard so many stories about what is possibly happening in the library in terms of lack of security, kids in there that are just basically somewhat out of control. And again, it gets back to the whole library standards issue. Where do we need to go with this to get the library off of the front page of the Capital Journal? Not only now are we talking about books where sex is pretty graphic in nature, we're talking about 16-year-olds having sex.
Well, part of the argument is that parents on the book restriction side of this is that parents should be supervising their kids. Their kids shouldn't be just there as roaming around and totally free. Now, I don't know how old these kids are, but obviously there's a problem then with
16 and 17. What the paper said. Yeah.
With those are kids that you would not necessarily need to have their parents like toting them around on little leashes. So, but to me, and we talk about community standards, and I believe community standards have reduced to the point where this is not surprising to me.
Yeah.
If we have a community standard that even allows debate as to whether sexually explicit material is okay for a 12-year-old to borrow, then this shouldn't shock us. Why is anybody surprised by this, and why is anybody surprised that they would try to cover it up? Community standards just are not what they used to be. And so perhaps this is, if I were a library board member, I'd say, see, this is why they need those books, so they could do it right and not do it in the reading room of the library. We've gone to a lower common denominator that just is unsettling for the community.
Yeah, and one of the comments made, Carrie Onstott Story, chairwoman of the board, said, and I quote, "I doubt that these kids read those books and then ran into the room to have sex." Well,
maybe they should have.
Well, a couple of thoughts come to my mind, Jim. One is that when the newspaper said that we contacted the staff and they weren't aware of it on the 9th, depends on who they talk to in the staff. I mean, if the executive director knew about it, she is not going to go around and tell everybody on the staff, hey, here's what happened, guys. She might tell some people, you know, to pay attention to the study rooms, things like that, for more security. But she's not going to tell everybody. I mean, that would be a violation of all kinds of privileges and rights. And certainly the responsibility of the executive director would not be to spread that kind of information around. So the newspaper maybe didn't contact the right person. But when they found out about it, then they took steps, they said. Secondly, in contemporary standards, I don't think anybody would say that the community contemporary standard would be to allow sex in the study room, 16 and 17-year-olds. That's not an issue. I mean, we'd all say, no, that is not what we want going on in the library. On the same thing, you know, it comes back to the books to a certain extent, in that if the 16 and 17-year-olds decide that they want to have sex, they don't need the library. And they'll find a place, and They don't need the study rooms of the library to be open and unmonitored for them to have sex. And that's going to happen. Same with those books. They want to read about that kind of stuff, they're going to find it one way or the other. And it's not the library's responsibility to keep a 16- and 17-year-old from having sex.
But you know, they can find it the way I found it when I was a kid, under my dad's mattress.
Come on. There you go. Okay, before we go on to another topic, John Arnold, Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman, anything else to say on the library issue or issues? Any closing comments?
We spent 37 minutes on it. It's probably lining out of bond.
All right. Well, this is the time of the day where we move on to the topics that our media roundtable members want to talk about. This was my topic of the day, was the library. John Arnold, Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman, in your opinion, the top story of the week?
The election.
Coming back to the election.
Sorry, the election, yeah, you bet. The fact that Mayor Button got reelected is a big story, I think. And the fact that he did so with a sizable majority.
65% of the
yes.
vote of 23% of the voters voting.
Well, yeah.
Bill Button carried 65% of the vote.
Yeah, 13 votes.
John, you know, something that, again, we've talked about on the show over the past week and a half that Jim Dinas pointed out when he was in the other day having a cup of coffee, and Jim was heavily involved in the Vote
right.
Yes campaign. But Jim was analyzing the vote totals in our primary to where we had 13% of Topekans that got out and actually voted. 87% of Topekans chose not to in our primary. But out of the 13% of Topekans that voted on primary election day, 70% of the voters were over age 50. 70% over age 50 in our primary election. Now, the general election, that went all skyrocketed up to 23% of Topekans that actually voted when we had a tax issue on the ballot and had a mayoral election. It's not only disappointing, it's disgraceful. How do we turn this around? How do we get Topekans energized? Would it have been the District 7 election? You know, now that people can see that, hey, my vote can possibly count.
Oh, yeah, one vote. Well, good point.
No, that won't make a difference. There's only one thing we can do to boost turnout at municipal elections. That's to shift them to November. That is, first of all, it would cost less because we'd be doing it at the same time we're electing legislators and congressmen and so forth. And if I'm going to vote anyway, I'm going to vote for president, I'm going to vote for senator, I'm going to vote for Congress. Oh, look, the mayor's race is on here, too. Yes, I did hear something about that, and I either like the current mayor or I don't. Or, you know, so you would have automatically that extra turnout because of the high-profile races, and I don't think we would lose any more, because I don't think people were very informed about this race. You know, these races.
There wasn't a lot of great information, but also
I just think there's just a general apathy. No matter what I do, I could go vote. It's not going to change anything. You know, we vote in Newbum. I don't know. I think they just don't see a whole lot of change over the past.
And unless you were passionate for either Lisa Stubbs or Bob Archer, you're going, okay, so one of them won by one vote. It's still going to be,
they're still going to raise my taxes. They're still not going to fix my roads. They're still, you know, in this community, and probably more than any place I've ever lived in Kansas, there is such a cynicism about local government that I think it would be very difficult to motivate people. And that's why at least if the state law would allow us to move the election to November, we could at least have a thing where people are voting for other reasons and we'll at least check off somebody.
Yeah, well, we didn't have hardly any reason to show up. I mean, we had no options. I mean, and those who are on the in the city with, I mean, all we had was school board. I mean, if you're in a city, if you're in one of the even districts, you weren't, you didn't have as many.
Yeah, you still voted for the mayor.
Yeah, you still voted for the mayor, but I guess you probably assumed that Button was going to carry it anyways. You're not passionate about, you know, you don't even know what the mayor does.
He doesn't.
Well,
you know,
his
own job description. He doesn't even. He's not even. City's own attorneys haven't figured that out yet. So,
I think it's a good point to move the elections in general. You end up with the negative on that is that it's hard for the local people to distinguish themselves and get that issue to the forefront. Like Jim said, when he went to the ballot on 1947, here were a couple of school board people he'd never heard of. Didn't know what their issues were, who was the incumbent, who was not. If either one was the incumbent, I had the same thing. I thought, oh, who are these people? We haven't heard anything about them. And all I got to vote for in my district was mayor and two school board members. And in a November election, you'd have the same thing, but it might be the mayor and council people that would have that. But at the same time, you've got a higher turnout. You've got more people voting. And I think that would be a help. I always think I've had some special elections that I've been touting in the past, but I always argued for going for the general because I believe, if you believe anything about democracy, the more people that vote, the better. And you'll get more people voting at the general election. And I'd like to see that happen.
And that gets into the age-old question of the quality of vote. And John, I'll respectfully somewhat disagree with you because the one thing a low voter turnout does, I think, you have a more informed electorate voting. The lower the voter turnout, the more informed the electorate is that's actually taking the time to get up off the couch and vote.
You're half right, Jim. You're half right.
Well, that's not bad.
No,
but,
you're half right.
If we want to go to John Arnold, what you're talking about, you know, as far as increasing the vote totals dramatically, let's take a look at the Oregon system.
Oh, the mail. The mail-in, yes.
Yeah, right. There are no polling places in the state of Oregon. You vote in Oregon, you're voting by mail, period.
King County, Washington is moving to that, I believe, at the next election. They're doing it very soon. But yeah, it's a growing thing.
Not a good thing, in my opinion, but a growing thing, I would agree with you. Because, again, if you're getting into mail ballot elections, now you've got somebody sitting on the couch that's just knocked down his fifth or sixth beer, and he sees the ballot laying there, doesn't have any idea who's running for what because he just turned off Andy Griffith. And this is an individual that's going to be electing our future leaders. That concerns me. I think we're philosophically better served by an individual making some effort to get up and go vote somewhere. I don't want to make it that easy, personally speaking, for somebody to vote. But I know there's the other argument that we would have a more representative democracy or republic if, in fact, we'd go to the Oregon system. So my thoughts...
Well, I'm a traditionalist. I love, even though I have the option of filling out a thing and mailing it in with the early ballots, I like physically going to the polling place and casting my ballot. And as geeky as I am with technology and smartphones and MP3 players and all that fun stuff, I want to fill out my paper ballot. Stick it in the machine.
You didn't use the computer system?
No, I did not. I do like the touchscreen balloting, but I want to go to the polling place to do it.
I do, too. And I did the touchscreen because I want to see how it's working.
I've done it once.
Let's get to you all can break the time, because, John, I know you favor the mail ballot system. And, again, it certainly would increase, if I read the comments right, it would increase the voter turnout, no doubt about it.
It would. And the downside of the low turnout, more informed voter is the special interest that can go and dominate, whether it's a left or a right or a whatever.
Exactly. That's why I said Jim was half right.
Yeah.
Because it does get more people informed. But allows those that are intentionally misinformed to dominate.
Intentionally misinformed. I like that. I like that. That's everybody that's opposed to me, isn't it?
I was thinking it was me, but okay.
The Oregon system. You're a traditionalist. You're saying no, Steve Foreman?
I'm going to say no. Because, I do like that interaction, the human interaction. And I think we've gone overboard on the technology. I was in a local box store late at night, and there were some kids hanging out. And here's these two groups of about five or six kids, and none of them are talking to each other. They're all punching a text message in or talking on their cell phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought you hung out with each other so you could talk to each other, not to the people hanging out across town. It just...
Well, I don't know about that. Me and my wife sit in on our couch with our laptops open and email each other, so...
Really?
I get an email from my wife while I'm sitting on the couch next to her. I'm like, what are you doing?
Do you have Facebook chats like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Is there an option C out there? John Arnold, Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman. If the Oregon system is not possibly the answer, how do we increase this vote total 4 years down the road when we're going to be electing a new mayor? Is the answer going to a November election? Is there another option out there that we haven't discussed?
Well, I like going to the November election because, like Steve said, it's a lot more cost efficient. I mean, to have your election all at once, people are going to be a lot more energized for whatever elections that are on the ballot. Good enough for the county. Why not the city? Right.
Good point.
Partisan elections, nonpartisan. Are we doing it right in terms of our municipal elections? Would you change that as well if we go to a November election? Should we then make these partisan elections? Because it's right now, it's the only elections we have where we don't officially know, you know, the status of our candidates, whether they are in fact are Republican, Libertarian, Democrat, or truly are unaffiliated. What do we do with that if we go to a November election?
I would make one change. I would keep them nonpartisan, but I would eliminate the primary. And instead go to, I believe it's Mississippi, where they elect even their U.S. senators this way and their governors. And that is, you have the open election. If a candidate gets 50%, it's done. If a candidate doesn't get 50%, then you have a two-candidate runoff down the road. And so there was no reason to have two elections in our mayor race because Mayor Bunton got a majority in the primary. Why did he have to go through the extra expense of going through a second round when he already proved he had majority support?
Good point. And we also had the change in the law that allows three candidates to be in the general rather than two, just two. And you've made that point before, Jim. That was not a good change in the law, and I agree.
And our legislators have had the wisdom to go back and rescind that, take it back to square one.
Good.
And
good.
That's working its way. It might have already reached the governor's desk, so we're going to go back to the original on that rather than putting three people into the general.
But I agree with Steve that if you get a majority in the primary, you ought not have to run in the general. Done deal. Whether it's two people or three people running at that point. I mean, of course, there would have been five, I think, for mayor. Wasn't it five in the primary?
I think it was, yeah.
Five candidates in the primary.
Yeah.
So you go over 50%, no general election.
Sure, you're elected.
Okay.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, the devil's in the details as far as partisan, nonpartisan. If we have a primary, if we move everything to November, that gets complicated if you're running nonpartisan elections, because you're also going to have partisan primaries as well, Democrats, Republicans. Then it's going to be confusing from the election commissioner standpoint. I'm a registered Republican. I want the Republican ballot and the nonpartisan ballot. I guess it would work.
It works because we have questions during primary elections.
I guess you're right. And I'm speaking out loud. It possibly might work.
I don't know why it wouldn't.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of
just be given two ballots rather than one.
Yeah, and then we still have the school board in the spring, I suppose. All school boards are elected in April. And
move that to the general?
Do I
move that to November as well?
Well, I wouldn't mind it. School boards would oppose it, I mean, because they always want low turnout. They want people who are only interested in education to vote, and they don't want to be confused with politicians. So it would probably stay the same. That probably wouldn't change.
What's the value of not having them partisan, though? I mean, isn't having a this would need to be explained to me, because having the value of the nonpartisan election, because at least, you know, if you see a R, D, or I after somebody's name, you have hopefully some general sense for if they more or less subscribe to your viewpoint. If you go in there and there's a position that you're not as familiar with, you know, they haven't campaigned that much. You don't, you know, there's some of those races, they're not going to inform you that much about where they stand on issues. And so at least that would give you some general idea. Hopefully.
On the other hand, the Republicans and Democrats have changed in my lifetime significantly.
Yeah.
In the South, it used to be that the Democrats were the segregationist party that you all voted for because you knew they would stay in the schoolhouse door. And then it switched, and it became the Republicans who were the conservatives in the South and the dominant party. And I'm not sure what the situation is currently. I think it's probably changing again.
A little muddled. Certainly is muddled in Kansas.
Very much so.
The only thing that's not muddled, as Steve said, is the cynicism about local government in Topeka, which is, of course, my opinion, totally justified.
Now, we've got three new city council members, all three of which were on the show, and I want to say that, you know, again, Bill Haynes, I had a lot of respect for. Mm. I agreed with Bill on a lot of issues. As a person, you know, I really think a lot of Glenda Kennedy. I think she had so much promise, and was very, very gracious last night, the last city council meeting. Having said that, all three of the newly elected city council members have been on the show, and frankly, all three were very impressive individuals. I just hope they continue to be what they appear to be as candidates, because I was impressed, frankly, with all three of the individuals, Mr. Wallguest, Karen Hiller, who I've known for 30 years, and Mr. Archer. So hopefully we're going to see a new improved city council. Hopefully we're going to no longer see this 5-4 I gotcha mentality that we've had for far too long in this community with the election of these three individuals. But having said that, because local politics, it's the engine that's driven the train of this show for years, a lot of interest in what's going on locally because of our city council, which has certainly sometimes been dysfunctional. But John Arnold, if you were sitting on the city council today over the next 12 months, and we're going to go around the table. If you could affect one change only, this is going to be the John Arnold ordinance. You're guaranteed you've got eight other voters and the mayor's in agreement with you as well. You've got one ordinance to where you can affect positive change in the community. What would be the John Arnold ordinance? Or anybody else that wants to start?
Change the number of districts to 7 or by district 3 at large. And the mayor elected as one of four at large.
With our current form of government?
Yes, council manager, former government.
All right.
That change in the council.
That would be the one, that would be the John Arnold ordinance.
Correct.
Okay. Kevin Dole.
Spend our money first on the things that cities are supposed to do before you spend them on other things like roads so we don't have to go back later and beg for more money. After we've neglected to do the basics.
Responsible government spending.
Yep. Dedicate the first X percentage toward roads, and then the next, you know, then police, fire, water, those things, and then whatever's left over, then you can look at the other things.
Steve Foreman.
I think a change in the way our council is elected, and I'm not adverse to your idea, but I believe that districts have led to more negatives in this community than positives. Every other community that I have lived in Kansas have been completely at large, have been five-person city commissions where you three of them were up for election each time. If you finished first or second, you got a four-year term. If you finished third, you got a two-year term and had to run with the other two the next time. And it seemed to me it was more responsive. And when you elect at any given election a majority of your council, you can change everything if you need to. You know, three out of five, you know, four out of seven, whatever it ends up being, you can make whatever changes need to be made if you think your community is going in a totally wrong direction. And I'm okay with some districts. I think what you are proposing might be a good compromise. But if it were me, if it were just strictly, you know, the Steve Foreman reorganization of government, I would go completely at large, and I think I would cut the number to five because it seems to work in every first-class city in the state except Topeka. The only thing that scares me about that, though, is that you're going to have certain areas that might not be represented at all because the money and the power comes from certain parts of town and they can influence. It doesn't seem to be a problem in Manhattan. It doesn't seem to be a problem in Salina. It doesn't seem to be a problem in Liberal, Garden City, Dodge City.
Those cities are not probably nearly as segmented.
I've lived in them, yes.
Yeah, the arguments are good. Both of you are correct. People will make the argument that it's hard to get representation if you don't have district. But you do have the argument that at large allows people to have citywide perspective a lot better and work together a lot better.
So if your words don't help. Hey, Kevin, if you're my district council person and you disagree with me on an issue, John has no reason as the next district's representative to listen to me. He might listen to me just because he's a nice guy, but he doesn't need my vote.
We're going to run about 2 minutes over on this because I want to come back to another question since, you know, we were talking about changing the makeup for a city council would be two of the three of your number one goals. Going back to what we had prior to 1986, and again, John, I want to start with you because you've worked in a number of communities. You've seen every form of government known to man. The one that Steve Horman that I liked the best was the form of government we had prior to 1986 in Topeka, where we were electing five individuals, one of which was the mayor, one of which was the water commissioner, one of which was the parks commissioner, one of which was the finance commissioner, and on and on. Or if we had a problem, if we had a pothole, we would go to our elected street commissioner, somebody that was an elected official, to solve that particular problem. And to the editor of blog comments, what have you, on CJ Online. There's always a comment on there if we're talking about changing our form of government, reverting back to what we had prior to 1986.
Right.
Now, John, this isn't your first rodeo. What was wrong? You weren't in Topeka back then, but you certainly, being from Atchison, were aware of that form of government. Maybe
Sure.
You saw seen it somewhere else. I know Galveston, Texas had it. But what was wrong with that form of government? Why did we change it? Because, again, going back to all areas of the city being represented, I think when we voted in 1986 to change the form of government, I think we had three Democrats, two Republicans that were serving as elected officials at the time, so we were getting a pretty good cross-section of representation, I think, due to a party mix that was 3-2 one year, Republican 3-2 the next year, Democrat. I think it ended up with the Democrats on top.
Some of the arguments were that most of the people on that commission form of government, and in Kansas we call the city councils most often commissions, but in Topeka that was the commission form of government. We had five commissioners, Commissioner of Water, Commissioner of Treasurer, Commissioner of Streets, and so on. And the problem with that form of government was really most illustrated, as you said, in Galveston with the hurricane that hit there in 1906 or 08, something like that. They had that form of government. The problem was in the cleanup afterwards, it was so disjointed, they weren't coordinating. And so they then took, and everybody sat everybody down and said, okay, we're going to appoint a business manager to be in charge of all of this. And that was arguably the first city manager in this country. And he was put in charge of cleaning everything up, and he coordinated everything and pulled it together because the five guys couldn't do it. And one of the things that happens in that commission form of government is that the treasurer, the guy with the money, would sit there and say, okay, for him to be successful, these other four can't spend money.
We'll continue this at another time.
All right.
Real quick, John Arnold, we are running way over your column today. Metro News.
I think it was a follow-up on what's happening at KU with the priority point system and how much it costs to get a ticket to a football and basketball game, because I had so many comments off the first one on that. So,
Devadil, TK Magazine.
We're working on a tribute to the arts, and we're doing coverage of where our banks stand in terms of, you know, with the world of bailouts and financial meltdown.
Oh, great.
Steve Foreman, how long are you going to be at the Roundabout Cafe?
I'm going to be here through most of lunch today, so...
Next Friday?
Come on. Oh, yeah. I'm sure I'll be here next Friday.
Okay. So come out.
Come on out. Have some brisket, burn ends, some of my wife's wonderful beans.
Visit with Steve Foreman. John Arnold, Kevin Dole, Steve Foreman. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Chris Johnston and the news, and then Dave Jackson, an hour of gardening guidance. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Case.
Good morning. Here's just some of the news you can read more about in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. Frito-Lay is moving towards packaging its SunChips brand that will decompose to compost, part of its ongoing effort to minimize the company's impact on the environment. SunChips are made by Frito-Lay in its Topeka plant and six other locations. The plan is to have the snack bags 100% compostable by Earth Day 2010. The bags made from plant-based materials will disintegrate in about 14 weeks in a properly managed compost pile. The local library board's Board of Trustees decided against turning the page Thursday evening, opting instead to keep four sex-related books available to minors. The board of the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library voted 6-3 in favor of adopting a staff recommendation to keep the books where they were currently located, on the shelf in the library's Health Information Neighborhood section. With half of Topeka's governing body on hand, Shawnee County commissioners took a step Thursday towards merging city and county parks and rec departments. City Commissioner Vic Miller, Shelley Bueller, and Ted Inslee voted 3-0 to approve an amended version of the proposed joint resolution expressing the intent of the city and county to consolidate parks and recreation departments into the single county agency effective January 1st. Mostly cloudy today with a high of 68, thunderstorms overnight and a low of 51. Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will return for another hour with Dave Jackson from Jackson's Greenhouse to answer all your lawn and garden questions.
Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will be right back with the Jackson's Greenhouse Gardening Show. Have a question about your lawn or garden? Phone lines are open at 785-295-1150.
Okay, and we're back with Dave Jackson. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, James.
Wednesday, I didn't make it out to Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, but boy, was I close.
Were you close?
Yes, I was. I was at the North Topeka Postal Annex.
Oh, that's
along
right.
Along with close to 2,000.
Wasn't that something?
Oh, absolutely incredible. You know, when I went out, I was really expecting a crowd, and I know Americans for Prosperity had 500 that had signed up, but normally if you have 500 that signs up for a rally like that, you're going to have 300 or 400 people actually come.
Right.
I was expecting to see 300 or 400 people when we pulled up. 1,500 to 2,000.
Where in the world did you park?
Incredible. We got there right at 5:30,
uh-huh.
And we parked back in the West Star parking lot right south
mm-hmm.
of the Postal Annex. We
right.
got maybe one of the last parking stalls there. But there were people parked all up and down Silver Lake Road. We stayed for about 45 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and we were there from 5:30 maybe until around 6:15. What a crowd.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. And the Topekans, they spoke out. And, again, as we've talked on the show all week ever since, Thursday and Friday, that I think the Democrats made a big mistake by saying this was just a group of right-wing extremists out to embarrass our president. Because I think there were 12 speakers that evening,
uh-huh.
one of which mentioned Obama. The other 11 didn't. This was not an anti-Obama rally. This was just simply elected officials, you're spending too damn much money.
Right.
Clean
get
your
it,
act up.
Get it under
and,
control.
Republicans, Democrats alike.
Good.
Democrats, I think, made a huge mistake by not really becoming involved in these Tea Party rallies.
A little louder,
rallies.
Dave.
Okay. A little louder. All right. So, well, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's and of course, the media's tried to play it down all the way through.
Yeah. But it was nice being that close to Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Yes, it was. So I haven't been out in a while. You know, Nancy's made a couple of three trips out over the past month or so. But I haven't been out in a while, and I was close.
But you were there.
1933, close. Lower Silver Lake Road. I could have come down the road, but you would have been closed by the time we left.
Yep.
Did you close at what time?
We're 6. We close at 6. I just have to give my folks a break. Basically, we don't have enough people to stay open till 7 that are well-trained to take care of the folks, so we have to go home at 6.
What was your big selling item last week at Jackson's?
The big selling item?
The hottest item last week that was just flying off the shelves.
Still, people, really, it's a blend. Folks finishing up their early gardening, we're the only ones that still have seed potatoes left. And so people are still coming in, about every third customer coming in and grabbing seed potatoes and that early gardening stuff, the onions. Onion sets and onion plants, all of that stuff. And then the other, of course, bigger item was folks getting an early jump on their tomatoes and peppers. So that would be the two top items kind of going out right now.
Seed potatoes and onions, Nancy picked up both. When are we going to start seeing little onion sproutings or seed potatoes?
So your onions, you should start be seeing those now. They should be up if you take a stroll through your garden, your seed potatoes. Probably by Monday, you should start to see some potatoes up. I can't remember when she actually planted them. But.
You know, I don't know. We put them in the ground last Saturday,
mm-hmm.
so they've been in the ground now for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see something as early as this weekend then.
Could. I mean,
yeah.
They're looking at 70 degrees and moisture. That should bring them up.
Good, good. Anyway. So we're going to have potatoes to bake when? Your best.
Potatoes to bake about the 4th of July.
Not bad.
Not bad.
We'll have onions prior to that. onion bulb becomes.
Well, now, if
there's
she's got
the point, I'm sure, of declining, diminishing returns.
If she's got onions sets, which are the little bulblets, those you pull as green onions or salad onions, just finger size. But having said that, if you leave them in the ground, by mid-July, they'll be about silver dollar size, possibly. You have to break off that seed stock that comes up, and you can leave them in the ground. Sometimes by fall, you'll have still have some nice onions in the ground growing.
Good, good.
So,
all right, it sounds good, and we got it. Our seed potatoes and onions at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Nancy asked, on seed potatoes. You know, we've left potatoes in the refrigerator too long before that have grown into what appears to be seed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that seed potatoes that we sell are grown and certified to be that specific variety, and they're grown under disease-free conditions, so that you're not, if you don't grow these under certified disease-free conditions, then you can get a buildup of viruses and those kinds of things in your potatoes, and your subsequent crops are going to be blighted, so to speak. And they'll get the black leg inside the potato where the cut it open and it's all black, or they'll get various kinds of foliage diseases come on them if they're not grown and they're not certified from virus-free stock. They index this kind of stuff and select for pure stock. That's the difference. Probably the first
difference.
But the first year you can probably get by with it. But the Irish famine, of course, was caused from just exactly that, a buildup of diseases through the years, and finally they couldn't grow potatoes in Ireland because they didn't know about viruses. They just knew they couldn't grow any potatoes, and of course, then all the Irish came over to America back then.
When you say viruses, something that's potentially poisonous?
It's not poisonous. It's not poisonous, but I mean, you wouldn't eat the potato because it tastes so nasty.
Yeah.
It's not poisonous per se, but it's a virus.
It's just inedible.
Right.
Okay.
Or your potato doesn't produce adequately. All kinds of things that happen, but it makes the fruit non-productive or the shrub bush non-productive.
Now, seed potatoes, is this something that you can replant? You say 4th of July, get them up out of the ground, start baking your potatoes because they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you can replant in mid-July and look for a fall crop, or is that possible?
If we have any seed potatoes left at the end of the season, we'll keep them in our cooler and have them available for replanting about the 1st of August. You can in Kansas grow a fall crop of potatoes.
So you can have two crops of potatoes in Kansas?
Yes, you can.
Same with onions? If we pull these onions up in May, June, now we're going to eat some of these as salad onions. Some we're going to leave in the ground for the big ones so we can use these as hamburger onions, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Can we replant in August at the same time and have a fall crop?
If I'm able to save some of the bulbs, I can't get them. I can't buy them. But if we keep them in the cooler all summer long, then I'll have them and had them available last fall for people. Late summer, I should say, August.
So that is a possibility.
It is a possibility.
Two crops.
If we don't sell out this spring, we'll keep them and sell them in the fall.
Okay.
Yes, you can double crop.
All right. How long can you keep a potato, one that's coming up out of the ground? Do we have to eat all these potatoes within a week? How long can you store a potato?
If you have proper storage conditions, you can store. You should be taking your last potatoes out of storage about now.
A year?
Well,
or 9 months.
Nine months. Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
Just keep them in the crisper in the refrigerator. Is that proper conditions?
Well, basically, it's a bit cold. Your for your starches to remain consistent. It's better if you have controlled atmosphere storage for potatoes. You know, our forebears had those fruit cellars for a reason, and that's because they stayed at 45 to 50 and cool and moist.
Mm-hmm.
That would be perfect. But so in your refrigerator, unfortunately, your beer refrigerator out in your garage is at 33 or 4 because you like the beer cold, but that's a little bit too cold for the potatoes. But by and large, if you could keep them in your crisper at a 45 to 50 degree, that would be better. You could do that. That's what, of course, they do. They store those potatoes that come to the stores. They've been in controlled atmosphere storage, all those.
For up to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah, the harvest period's all going to be all the same, pretty much, based on where they're grown. But there'll be some, if you're growing in North Dakota, that you wouldn't harvest until late August and through September. But those, even still, those have to be stored until you want to eat them now.
Okay. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. And as always, you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. And again, we're at the Roundabout Cafe. You can always stop by here, and you can ask Dave your questions either on or off the air. Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish. Heading in today is Barbecue Friday at the Roundabout. And each and every Friday is, and Steve Foreman's cooking up the barbecue as we speak. So,
wow,
if you're into barbecue, today is the day to come to the Roundabout.
No kidding.
21st and Urish. Yes, indeedy.
How about that?
Yes, indeed. Huh?
When does that start?
3 weeks. This is the third week.
No, I mean, it's available now if they come out here at 10 o'clock?
It's available. It's available, huh? You're ready
that?
For barbecue, huh?
Well, it sounds really good.
It does.
Maybe when we get done here. I don't know. I got to...
You can bring me some, too.
Get you some, too?
Yeah, bring me some.
Sure, you can count on it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. I'll stick to my yogurt.
Trish, let's take a break. And when we come back, we've got a lot to talk about. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. We do this each and every Friday on CJ Online, where we talk about gardening tips. More, a lot more to come, as a matter of fact. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
From the vantage point, Lafatu saw six war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures, the eaters of men, cannibals. Lafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. Four figures were tearing through the jungle. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, thinking only of his canoe. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
We're back. And we're back. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Can you sing the jingle?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
Huh?
I cannot.
I'll tell you. Well, we can't. Next Friday, maybe for the first person that comes through the doors that can sing the Jackson's jingle, we've got tickets to the Thunder Hill Speedway.
Very good.
George Welch. Do you know George?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, of course.
Huh?
He worked for us after before his first wife died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just after he retired and needed something to do, he worked for us a bit in the spring.
Well, I'll be. Well, now he's the marketer for Thunder Hill Speedway.
Right.
Him and his wife were in, couple of weeks ago,
uh-huh.
and they gave us several tickets to give away
yeah.
to the Thunder Hill Speedway, which is up north of the river. I've never been. So
neither have I, Jim.
You haven't?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to be taking it in this summer. So maybe we'll give a couple of tickets away next week to the first person that comes out to the Roundabout Cafe and can sing the Jacksons jingle. Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, it might not sound good.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, it doesn't have to sound good.
That's why I don't sing it. It doesn't sound any good. I can't carry a tune like that gal on YouTube, or Britain's Have Talent, or whatever that was. You've seen that, haven't
no.
you?
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't think I have.
I did. Was that not awesome or
was
what?
Was that awesome
oh
or what?
Oh, my gosh.
What is it?
She was this little, it's Britain's Got Talent. It's like America's Got Talent here.
Uh-huh.
Same judges.
Same judges. And
yeah.
she was this little frumpy
really
little
frumpy
woman.
Housewife looking.
Yeah,
like,
I bet she's
never been married. Right.
She said she's never even been kissed. She's 40-some years old. And they were all kind of rolling their eyes when she came out. She has the most beautiful voice.
She just knocked the people
yeah.
out right
oh
out of their
gosh,
seat.
Oh, my gosh, it was awesome.
That's just something.
Huh.
She's from, she's Scottish, I guess.
Yeah, she's from a little village in Scotland somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's off to the big time.
Yeah, she was featured this morning on, what does Rush call them, MSNBC or whatever.
Yeah.
I think there's a video you can get on her and see. I think there's a video of her online you can see.
On YouTube. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's how I first saw it.
I'm curious to see what she's going to end up looking like when they get a hold of her.
Well, she definitely needs some...
Yeah.
Because...
work out the gym,
right?
Maybe.
What's his name did a mock of that last night. She looks like... Who's the Tonight Show host? Jay Leno.
Jay Leno?
She looks like Jay Leno with a wig.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah,
yeah,
kind of.
Well...
Because he did a knockoff last night of it.
Just yeah.
fun and put on the wig or whatever.
Yeah.
They filmed him doing it.
Well, that's kind of neat for a person like that made it, though.
Oh.
I think so.
That's heartwarming. That's
yeah.
kind of a heartwarming
really
story. Yeah. That somebody...
completely unexpected.
Post 40, now she's got her moments of fame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. That's cool. But no, I have not seen it, have not heard of it. But again, last year I was voted as the least hip person in Topeka.
Really?
Contest on V100 or something, yeah. You know, I look at these birthdays in the paper. If they are under 45 years of age, chances are 9 out of 10. I've never heard of.
What?
Yeah.
You know all the old folks, huh?
We'll just test Mr.
Oh,
Jackson today. I haven't looked today. I don't
oh,
know
well, I don't know any of
say, these. Say what? Well, there's not many, so this is going to be a short test. Let's just see how hip you are.
Okay.
Pop culture. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse Garden Center. They're all under 45. We lucked out. All right. 45 years young today, singer Maynard James Keenan.
Really?
That's what I would say. Really?
Well, happy birthday, Maynard. Wherever you are and
wherever you are,
or
whatever it is you sing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, 42 years young, actress Kimberly Elsie, E-L-I-S-E. Elise?
Elise, uh-huh.
Who is she?
Not sure. Don't know.
You know, if V100 were to run this contest again, I might have somebody to do it. I'd
give you that
first.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. 42 years young today, singer Liz Phair, P-H-A-I-R. Liz Phair.
That's a familiar name, but I sure couldn't put a face to it, and I don't know what you think.
Well, you're one ahead of me then.
Uh-huh.
Being a familiar name. I've never heard the name before, so you're one ahead of me.
What's the spelling that catches you?
Yeah, P-H-A-I-R. I've never seen that spelling. Okay, the last one. Rapper, actor, Redman. He's 39 today, or she's 39.
Hmm.
He, I guess. It's Redman. He. I'm old four. I mean, I've never heard of any of these four people.
Oh, you're right.
You've heard of one of them, and
yes.
you thought you'd heard of the second one, so maybe you're kind of one and a half or two for four. None of these people I've ever heard of. And again, they're all under 45. So, or 45
yep.
or under.
I get you. We're not keeping up, Jim.
No, we're not. No, we're not. Hey, you're involved, I believe, in the Every Woman's Resource Center house.
The Designer Showcase.
The Designer Showcase, and that officially opens to the public today.
The preview is today, whatever the sponsor preview is tonight, actually.
Okay.
And so then it opens to the general public tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Uh-huh, because we're desperately finishing up, getting all the mulch in place and doing this. It's a.
Have you been involved for how long in the Designer Show House? Is this something you've been doing?
We, on and off, we've done, we've only done three of the houses over the past 29 years in terms of the landscaping. They break it up into sections of landscape. On this one, it's just there's just two sections, front and rear.
Mm-hmm.
The front section is what we're doing, and it's a huge project. Kind of what we're doing because of the limitations is kind of overhauling an existing landscape. It's a house that's 15, 20 years old and 25 years old, and the landscape had been severely neglected over the years. Even though the owner, Jerry Whitmer's really interested in that. He just, it's not his primary residence. He technically lives in Florida to avoid Kansas's high taxation, 6 months in one day, and of course. So, it's his house being totally redone. He's not married, divorced, and so this house has had absolutely no feminine touch for the 15 years that he's been separated and been a resident of Florida. But it's a spectacular place. I mean, it's been completely ignored, pretty much. And so it was.
Wow.
We had to move 20-foot blue spruces that had been mistakenly been planted by this whoever did the landscaping right square in front of the house. Couldn't even hardly see the house. They'd overgrown and then completely redo that landscape. And it's got beds all over the place, but they were all completely overgrown and whole project. But it's a great, this is Every Woman Resource Center's, they do one fundraiser a year and they have to make it on this, and the place is just absolutely gorgeous.
Huh. Now folks, this sits at Urish Road and Huntoon.
Right.
It's what they call the Bear Lake area.
Mm-hmm.
I've never driven back there. There's what, three homes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
The Kindlings, the Whitmers, and I'm not sure who the third house.
Me either. But anyway, yeah, that's what's on that property. They set back off the road, and of course, the driveway's roughly 250 yards east of Urish and Huntoon, and on the north side, you'll see the sign. It's the place where they've got the bears carved in the old dead trees at the front.
Yeah.
And kind of an interesting deal, and then, of course, the Bear Lake part is down in the valley when you come out.
Can you see the lake from his home?
Oh, yeah. When the leaves aren't on the trees, at least. Right now you can. I suspect that you can't see the lake when it gets all leafed in around it. I expect that there's that much wooded area between he and the lake. It's just below his house about 100 yards.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take a drive up there.
Oh, sure.
Just to see that whole area back there, the three homes, because I understand you've got a beautiful view
mm-hmm.
of Topeka, because you're sitting up on a hill,
mm-hmm.
one of the higher points in West Topeka.
Right. Try not to hit my landscapers as they're finishing up along the driveway at the entrance. So don't be running over them when you're
after. Now, Dave Jackson, the grape arbors out in the front.
Yes.
Is that Whitmer's?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's Jerry's. Uh-huh.
And that ties into the Montreux Castle down at the bottom of the hill on Huntoon. That's also
true.
Jerry Whitmer's.
That's also Jerry's. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And he's moved in a little old church and kind of some stuff around the castle, kind of a village. He's building a little French village down in there. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, it really is.
And that's open as well to for viewing and stuff. There may be a charge to go through the castle itself. Not sure. But it's a really interesting area. And at some point, he's going to have to develop bus parking or something for people to view that.
I would think so. And tying it into Bear Lake, the whole nine yards, it's
mm-hmm.
a beautiful area to drive by on.
It is. Uh-huh.
And folks, at the very least, drive by and take a look at it. But if you have a chance,
now, it worries
view
me
the home, because this is, as you say, a major fundraiser for Every Woman Resource.
Right. And they've set it up so that there's lots of sitting areas and areas to enjoy the property. Just walk the property and go down to the Bear Lake. What they're trying to do is get people to stay and maybe eat lunch there. They have an extensive availability of lunch or wines or whatever they're going to serve, and there'll be places to sit and or walk through sipping your latte or that time and just kind of enjoy the environment more so than most of their others in the past, because there's so much more there to, that you can walk around and just enjoy.
Dave Jackson, I want to get into the gardening aspect of this, if we could, because this Montreux castle, it's a French castle, and it's all kind of a French theme.
Mm-hmm.
When we think of France, we think of either A, the Eiffel Tower, B, Paris, or C, wine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, Jerry Whitmer has started the grape arbors, you know, at now you can see those from the road. In fact, they're right along Urich, right north of Huntoon.
Right. Right now, of course, he's got all those bulbs under him all blooming. He's also planted all those daffodils and everything. They're still kind of, they're in bloom right now. The weather stays cool. They've been gorgeous this past 2 weeks.
Now, these grape arbors, because he's going to produce, I would imagine, several different varieties of wine. I don't understand exactly how this works. But somebody coming into Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center
mm-hmm.
and wanting to start a grape arbor,
mm-hmm.
what are they getting when they come in? Do you offer, do you want Zinfandel? Do you want Merlot? How does this work?
Interestingly enough, as I was driving over here, one of my close friends from Hawaii that we've met and is on the board of the Homeowners Association with me, I was discussing this with her.
Oh, really?
They have a vineyard in the state of Washington.
Uh-huh.
Her comment was that, of course, Kansas's summers are kind of too hot for the truly, some of the truly wines that you're talking about. We are more the fruit area for, or the fruity wine. In other words, the Concords and some of those were not a reliable, source for dry red wines. Our winters are too cold and our summers are too hot, because a lot of those grapes are for zone 6 and work zone 5. So
zone 6 is
south of here, or along
getting into the northern end of the Sun Belt now.
We're in zone 5, that the numbers go down as it gets colder. But you know, coastline up Washington and all of that, of course, is zone 6, because you have the ocean there. It never gets real cold because the breezes come in off the Pacific. So anyway, and our summers, of course, are beastly hot because we don't have the cool breezes coming in off the ocean. So it's a bigger challenge to really do a good wine. I mean, we have wineries in Kansas, and they've done a lot in breeding the wine, the ones for wine. But when you come in to see us, basically we're talking about mostly table grapes that you're going to be growing. Although, of course, Annette and I, when we were first married, did make wine out of Concord wine, and we made wine out of the white grapes, and we made wine out of the Catawbas or the pink. But, so you can do both. You can do it all, but you're just not making a truly, well, whatever the I'm not a wine drinker at all, but I guess we're not one of the places that you consider that we're going to be making a high-quality California-type wine because of our conditions here. But I mean, having said all that, Kansas in the late 1800s was a significant producer of wine and grapes.
Now, when you come out to Jackson's, are you getting red grapes, white grapes? What would be the difference in red and white as far as growing conditions?
When you come out to us, any of the grapes that we're going to sell you are going to be just fine. We're going to sell, Concords are, of course, purple. We have the white and the pink as well. We have them with or without seed. Just kind of depends on what you're wanting to grow. I mean, they're bare root right now, so you buy them for a little less money because they haven't been potted yet.
Uh-huh.
Take them out of our cooler, and we'll show you how to grow them and how to train them up on the arbors if you choose to. And that's what you get. Basically, Concord, Canidus, Catawba, and Himrod White. Those are the primary ones that are easy to grow in your garden without so much care.
Which would be the easiest as far as growing conditions in Kansas, whether it's red, white, Concord, Catawba? What is the one specifically that just grows a lot better in this climate that you would recommend as far as growing conditions?
Yeah, probably the old Concord. I mean, everybody in the used to have a kind of a fence row that had some Concord grapes on it.
Mm-hmm.
And those were generational, practically, without much care, keeping, you know, didn't have to do much, and there'd be grapes out there to pick. When I remember going to my great great aunt's house, and she had grapes out there on the fence in August, pick them and eat them. Nobody cared for them; they just kind of were there. So that'd probably be the easiest, but in terms, but they don't really, the ones we sell don't require any specific care. We got to do that.
We
got
to take a break. Boy, are we late for a break.
Pause.
When we come back, let's continue a question or two if we could.
Okay.
Because I'm anticipating that possibly you're going to have some hands-on interest in grape harbors as a result of a crowd going out to ERC. A lot of people are going to be having the same thoughts I am.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because these grape harbors are up and down Eurish as you pull in
right
to the CRC home.
Mm-hmm.
So I would anticipate you're going to have a question or two. Maybe we can answer a few of those when we come back.
Hopefully.
Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. Stay tuned, folks. More to come. We're broadcasting live as we do each and every Friday from the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Eurish.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Close your eyes in Chicago, and you can hear the sound of zebra braying in Africa. Look hard out your window in D.C., and you can see the snow-covered peaks of the Andes. The world is that small. We are that connected. Please visit Earthshare.org and learn how the world's leading environmental groups are working together. Earthshare, one environment, one simple way to care for it all. A public service message from Earthshare and the Ad Council.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the cage of doom. Algebra 2, foreign languages, and biology. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road, 232-3416. Folks, anytime, 7 days a week, you've got a gardening question. There is somebody there that can answer it for you. Dave, if we could, let's finish up on the grapes. Because with everybody going out to the ERC home, everybody's going to be driving by these grape harbors, and everybody, or a lot of people, are going to be saying, gee, I'd like to have one of these in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go out to Jackson's, you're getting the bare root.
Mm-hmm. All right, now,
plant it. We plant it.
It's already 2 years old, so when you it's been grown for 2 years and dug then, and so plant it. And this year you're not going to get much production, or if any. You may get get maybe one little cluster,
mm-hmm.
but the following year then you'll start to get a couple of grapes, but you really will start into full production your third year of growth on your grapes. So that's a total of five. Only the first 2 years they were spent in the nursery.
So when you buy this bare root, 3 years you're going to have grapes.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Not bad.
What?
Not bad.
You're going to have full production in 3 years, pretty much.
No. As far as maintenance, care, upkeep, like you said, you know, years ago the farmers used to plant these along the fence rows. Very little care, very little maintenance, very little upkeep.
Right.
Nothing's changed.
Well,
you need to spray them every spring.
It wouldn't hurt to spray them. Grapes are, you'll keep them more disease-free if you do a dormant spray, either lime sulfur or the dormant oil spray for grapes before they bud out. Of course, it's too late now. I mean, if you have grapes already, it's too late now. But then later on, if we get an area or a time in June or July when we're having rainy periods, evening rain, cloudy weather, and that kind of stuff, powdery mildew can be a problem on the leaves of the grapes, and so it wouldn't hurt to hit them with some broad-spectrum fungicide. The Fertilome makes one that can be used on fruit and all of that kind of stuff. But they don't really take the kind of attention that if you're trying to grow a worm-free apple, for example, it's not absolutely essential that you're out there every 10 to 14 days spraying on grapes. They don't require that much. If we have conditions that persist, high humidities, dark weather, rainy temperatures, then you do need to do some protection. You know, and we had that last summer, a couple of times during the summer, where we had kind of 3 or 4 days in a row of dark, damp, gloomy weather, which is Kansas in the summer is kind of a welcome relief, but it will add to your disease pressure on those. So you just have to kind of be alert and in tune with what's going on.
Okay.
Take the time to walk your properties and take a look and see what's going on.
If there's something going on, that's the time to give you a call.
Mm-hmm.
The ideal time to plant the spare root.
Month of April.
I mean, it is now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Somebody coming out in mid-May, is it too late to get it in this year?
Well, by then we've hopefully got those potted up and leafed out so that...
So you
they'll
can
be
still plant them. They're just not going to be the bare root.
They're not going to be bare root. They're going to pay. They're going to have to have paid me to pot them up, the soil and the pot, the labor, and so they run into a little more money. Then they're going to be $12 to $14 instead of $7 to $8 as they are right now, because we've had to grow them.
50% off, basically, if you get it in the ground now, which
right.
It should be anyway.
Right. Yeah, it would be
okay.
Better.
So a hard frost, hard freeze, if you get it in the ground now, not going to have any impact at all.
No, because they're still dormant. We keep them in our cooler, and they're dormant. They're not leafed out or anything, so nothing's going to harm them. Just slow them down a little bit because the degree days are obviously not there when the temperatures are cool. But, yeah, they're not anything that we would get now couldn't kill them.
Dave, you mentioned earlier in the show you've had some of your customers out planting tomatoes already. Now, I remember I thought... You said May the 10th is kind of the cutoff date in Topeka as far as a hard freeze day. You've got Freedom Day, May the 10th in most years.
Right, 98% of the time.
Now, are people that are buying tomatoes now, are they just basically growing these in their garage to be planted later?
Well, they are
either... If I come out now and buy tomatoes, what am I supposed to be doing with them?
Well, there's two things. One, if you have the wall of waters that you can put the water tent around them, you can plant them in your garden because that's going to protect them down to 25 degrees. Otherwise, most of what my people are telling me that they're keeping them in their flats and setting them out during the day, and if it's going to get really cold at night, then they'll bring them in. But they like to get them hardened off in the tray so that when they actually put them in the garden, they take right off.
Uh-huh.
So that's how they do it.
Okay.
That's why they're buying them. And besides which, of course, this is going to be a huge year for plants, and people don't want to miss out. On getting their varieties. And we grow 53 varieties, but that doesn't mean that I have every variety available every day because I never can tell when somebody's going to come in and take two or three flats of one thing. That's going to run me out until the next round of plants are ready.
Two or three flats?
Flat, like, you know.
These
like,
are commercial growers, then.
Well, they're guys, they're
well,
people
they
that
really
have...
They really love tomatoes.
They love tomatoes. They have big families or whatever. They give them away, or they take them to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Wherever they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's more people than you would expect that have that will grow 100 to 150 tomato plants.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
To grow 150 tomato plants? Acre? 2 acres?
Oh, no. 100 tomato plant takes about 6 square feet, so that's about 1,000, 1,200 square feet.
Okay. Wow. And then you can legitimately be a truck gardener. You can make... A little extra income running to the farmer's market.
You could, sure. Or if set up a stand in front of your driveway if you've got a space.
Yeah. Interesting.
need something to do on the weekend.
There you go.
Huh? Yeah.
I'll bet that'd be good.
Have Nancy with her stand.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We don't get that much traffic on the
road. Well, put it over there by the clubhouse.
Could do that. I like that. But, yeah, the ideal planting time as far as getting it in the ground again would be around May the 10th, the second week of May as far as...
That's when the soil temperatures are warm. The plant's going to just take right off and everything.
It's going.
In the before then, if you want to plant and you want to put hot caps on them, or if you want to, for example, if you have tomato cages and you wrap some saran wrap around your tomato cage, create your own mini greenhouse, and you can beat the season by a week to 10 days if you do that, because you're warming that soil by keeping it covered and warm and heated, then the root system on that tomato plant will take off, and the tomato plant will take off. But if you just take the tomato plants home from our greenhouse today, stick them in the ground, they're just going to say, golly, I think I'll take a break. I'm not growing yet. But especially if you buy them from big box stores, too, that have been sprayed to not move, not grow for a couple, 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to plant them and you won't see one new leaf for 2, 3 weeks.
Nothing.
Right, because they've been stepped on. We call it stepped on. Chemically, they've stopped the growth so that they can sell them during that period that they're in the box stores.
We need to take one more break. Let's work that in right now. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse.
Talk about specials then.
There are specials. Let's do that when we return.
All righty.
All right. The weekend specials coming up. Stay tuned. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
I want to change some things. I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life: education, income, and health.
I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalk.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. For more, visit United Way at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Some teens have trouble just making it to graduation.
If it wasn't for my best friend Enrique, I would have just been out working already right now, like working at a factory, you know, making little pay, like $5. I would have been like one of the other kids there, like dropouts. He tells me, don't do it, please don't do it, you know. If I wasn't a real friend, I would have never told you this. You know, I would just keep shut and just let you do it. He opened my eyes even more.
Give Danny the boost he needs to graduate. Go to boostup.org and send him a message in your own words. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
All right.
All right, Dave Jackson, you know we announced that next Friday, somebody coming into the Roundabout Cafe that could sing the Jackson's Greenhouse Garden Center jingle, we were going to give 2 tickets to the Thunder Hill Speedway away. 2 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad deal.
Mm-mm.
Well, we've got somebody that wants to get a jump on it. Now, we're still going to have 2 more tickets. Next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got an individual on the line with us right now that would like to have 2 tickets to go to the Thunder Hill Speedway.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, imagine
and
that.
All she has to do is sing a few bars of the Jackson Greenhouse Garden Center.
I pass.
Who do we have with us?
I pass.
Huh?
I pass.
Huh?
I hummed it for you.
Now, you were so... You're so shy now that you're back on the air, Trish. Huh?
Trust me, no one wants me to sing it.
All right.
Take my word for that.
Maybe next Friday.
All right.
Dave, let's talk about the specials this weekend at Jackson's Greenhouse.
This is our we're right in the midst, or just started, from the 15th through the 22nd, celebrating tax payment season. We have a preseason flat sale where you can buy a whole flat of 12 four-packs of our annuals for $14.99, or you can buy six packs of our jumbo six-packs, 36 bigger plants, for $14.99. Or we have a landscaper mixed tray, 32 plants, mm-hmm. all for $14.99. This is a mix-or-match deal. As long as you stay within the 12 four-packs or the six-packs, it doesn't have to be. You don't have to pick up that whole flat and take everything the same. So that's always a big draw. It pushes us ahead a little bit of the season for folks that really want to do some pots and that kind of stuff and get things started in their baskets early where they can move them in if they have to. This is an opportunity to save roughly about 35 or 40% over the each price of those things. So that's the one big feature we're having. And then knockout roses, we planted and grew about 600 or 700 2-gallon knockout roses this past winter, including the new sunny yellow and the new double pink knockout to go along with our regular double knockouts, our regular red knockout, our regular pink knockouts, blushing knockout. So we have a plethora of knockout roses in 2-gallon containers, regular $24.99 each. They're three for $49.97, which is 33% saving. The county has already come out and purchased 150 of them, so I have about 450 to 500 left. But and if you want to go see the roses, they're out there at the Tulip Time deal.
Ensley Gardens.
Yeah, Ensley Gardens. They're out there at Ensley Gardens, the county roses, and that'd be another good thing to do this weekend is it's Big Beautifications Association fundraiser is the tulip time right now.
And that truly is beautiful, and we're talking about the west side of Lake Shawnee.
Right.
So the Ensley Gardens.
So over the past 3 years, the county has come out and bought roughly 800 roses from us.
Good night.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So they can get them from us because we grow them locally for less money than anywhere else. And they know what they're getting. So we're pleased to be a part of that.
800.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all 800 are going out to the Ensley Gardens?
In that area, all those, where those waterfalls are and all of
yeah.
that other kind of stuff, yeah.
Oh, good night.
It's a big area. They have just done remarkably well out there.
Yep, and expansion.
Mm-hmm.
They're expanding it as they go.
Right.
As you say, Topeka Beautification's been heavily involved. Keep America Beautiful is now getting involved in that
right.
as well.
That's it. Really a gem in the city to be Ensley Gardens.
You betcha. You betcha.
So that's our two specials. The feature this weekend at 10 a.m. on Saturday, if you're interested or need to know more about water gardening or ponds for your landscape, Eric Wood, former owner of Puddles and Pads, will be out for a couple hours to do a seminar with people, help them get started, answer their questions, show them what needs to be done. He can answer all the questions that you might have on water gardening. He is the pro in Topeka, more than anybody else that I know of. He's done it all. Installation, retail stores, sales. He has it together. And hope we have room for about 20 or 25 people. Hopefully we won't have to turn anybody away. But this is our first time that we've actually done one of these. So I'll be interested to see if folks come out and want to talk to Eric. The week following tomorrow is next Friday, we're having a pond build demonstration. For those people in the business or that want to be in the business or want to learn how to do it, that we're having a pond build. We're doing two features at the greenhouse next Friday morning starting at 9 a.m. It's an all-day thing. There's a $20 charge.
So this is a week from today.
Yeah, $20 charge. You need to get signed up, get your $20 in. Lunch will be provided.
Okay.
And come out and you can watch it being done.
Okay. So for sure, it'll be an all-day affair?
Yeah, it's a hands-on deal, so you might be asked to help do something. But it's 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We're going to be doing two features, a pondless waterfall and a disappearing rock kind of a feature as well, where they have the water pour through the rock and goes back down into a collection bowl and underground. So it'll be fun to see what's happening.
So this is A, for people that want to get into the business, possibly,
yeah.
Or B, just for somebody that wants to do this in the backyard, either way.
Right.
They makes no difference it. Whether right. you want to do this for your own enjoyment or if you're learning how to do it commercially.
They can watch it.
Either way.
So invitations are out for the people in the business if they want to.
That's going to be at 9 o'clock next Friday.
9 a.m. next Friday, yep. We have
and if you're a do-it-yourselfer, I would think this would be an ideal opportunity for you folks because...
To answer a lot of questions before you get started.
Oh, you betcha, and you say you're going to have other people that are in the business out there as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, being retrained.
Right. Continuing it.
You're going to be surrounded by experts.
I hope so,
nine
yeah.
to three.
Because I'm certainly not... I don't know all there is to know about it. I just know enough to advise a little bit on the top of it, but... and we put in some waterfall features and all that kind of stuff, but I'm not a pro, and I can always take time to learn
yeah.
from those folks, see what's going on, and see if I can pick up a few more points.
So it's a good opportunity for everybody, folks, this one.
Plus, yeah, plus
it sounds
plus,
like if you're involved, plus. If you want to get involved in this, if you have any interest in it, mm-hmm. this is money well spent.
Right.
If you're a do-it-yourselfer especially.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Take advantage of this one, and that is next Friday. 9 o'clock. Dave, we are out of time.
Imagine that. Now I've got to head over to the ERC and see if we're getting everything done.
We will see
you. Designer showcase over there.
We will see you next Friday. And folks, take advantage of going out starting tomorrow at the ERC. Before you go out to Jackson, stop by and take a look at the ERC house.
Whoops, I almost lost you there.
Just about.
Yeah, they really need to get out to see this
you betcha.
Designer showcase thing.
Well, I want to because I just want to see that neighborhood
mm-hmm.
sitting at the corner of Urish and Huntoon,
mm-hmm.
Bear Lake, the Bear Lake area, folks. This is your opportunity. Take advantage of it before you head out to Jackson's tomorrow for the specials. See you next Friday, Dave.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Trish, you have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay. Enjoy the grandson.
All right.
Sons, yeah. Now grandsons. And, folks, we'll be back with you Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Have a great weekend. I'm Jim Cates.